A Yale lecturer spoke about her desire to brutally murder a bunch of white people because we're at this point in the culture where it's gradually escalated from, hey, we just want diversity in video games, to a lecturer at Yale talking about dreaming of executing white people randomly in the street. And that's quite insane. I can understand the argument about, you know, free speech and all that and platforming, but they're kind of taking it into an extreme direction. And there's a lot to talk about there because, hey, what about free speech, right? Well, we'll go through this. We got a lot of news. Bitcoin conference is happening, and it's Friday night, and we're chilling. And we got a bunch of cool people hanging out. But I must point out to everybody listening, last night we had a technician come out. Turns out our internet was struck by lightning. Dead serious.
Oh.
And so it fried some of the ground wiring. We're in the middle of nowhere, so we have long ground wires that run from our property out into where the street is and then connecting up. And at some point, it got struck by lightning, and it fried the cable going up our property. So they laid a cable, like, on top of the ground. Quite literally, a squirrel could walk up to it and nibble, and we get cut off. But, hey, maybe we'll have internet for this show. Otherwise, welcome to rural living. But we're hanging out with some great people. We have the one and only G-Prime 85, George Alexopoulos.
That's right.
Pull that microphone, brother.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, absolutely. You have a picture behind you of Joe Biden eating OK Boomer Girl.
Oh, my goodness. Whoever drew that must be a conspiracy theorist.
Something is wrong with whoever drew that.
What kind of freak? You know, I bet that person only has one joke. Yeah. That's yeah.
Like
talentless, waste of talent.
Say something obnoxious, then empty panel, and then
shocked face. What kind of jerk? I certainly wouldn't invite him.
Do you read a lot of Junji Ito?
I love Junji Ito.
Yeah. That's kind of obvious.
He was training to be a dentist, I think, at one point.
Wow.
And he decided to draw horror manga. So whatever he saw in the dental school inspired him.
Well, now you... Joe Biden is a monster looking out of the walls and eating OK Boomer Girl, which is interesting because OK Boomer Girl's back in the news because she bought a $2 million. I don't know if she bought it, but she has a $2 million apartment.
Yes.
And she's getting slammed because for some reason these young socialists are always very proud to be successful capitalists. But, you know, whatever.
Well, really, that's the power of, you know, looking good. And that's why I'm also buying a $1 million house.
Exactly.
I too, on my Patreon, you know, people are paying me to take off my shirt because everyone wants to see that.
The OnlyFans?
Live on this show.
I wonder if there was 50,000.
And the internet gets cut off. Yeah.
I wonder if there was a point where, you know, like Bernie Sanders is looking at his speech and it says like millionaires and the billionaires. And then his assistant or aide or whatever goes, oh, Mr. Sanders, you are now a millionaire. He goes, oh, okay. And he just scratches out millionaire.
Just the billionaires. Don't worry. Millionaires are fine people.
Person perspective.
Some millionaires, I assume, are good people. There's nothing. Not all the billionaires.
Very fine people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the million. Well, you've probably noticed that Seamus is here as well.
I'm also here. We have two cartoonists on tonight. This is unbelievable. Why would you do this?
It may cause a singularity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe some problems.
I don't know what's going to happen by the end.
We need a crossover where it's like a Freedom Tunes thing, where it's like it's very hokey kind of like violence. You know what I mean?
What?
Yeah, no. I mean, they punch and it's cartoon. It's very cartoony. Sure. We need to throw in some like, you know, G Prime Junji Ito style vibes of like Joe Biden eating a child or something.
Oh my gosh. You know, someday, maybe 10 years from now, I want to have drawn at least one other thing that people remember me by. That'd be very nice.
Well, it's just that we have two of your comics.
Yeah,
behind Seamus is Joe Biden eating a child.
Yes.
And behind you, George, is Joe Biden eating OK Boomer Girl.
Yeah.
That's a trend.
That's true. There's a trend.
So,
what do you really believe?
What kind of sick mind? Really. This is an intervention, isn't it? You guys brought me here to...
Thanks for coming.
These cartoons really are an act of violence. They really are.
That's true.
I got to know, George. Tuesday, I was talking about... I was just desperate to see a Fauci image.
Oh,
and
yes,
up on Twitter the next day.
Yeah.
Had you been working on that, or did you whip it up that night?
No. Every morning, this is my process. It's amazing. And everyone cares. So I wake up real early. I take a shower. I breakfast. You know, I'm looking through my Twitter, and I see what's in the news. And Fauci was trending, whatever. So it's... For a long time, I had this one image of him. What was he? There was a Biden like holding a needle or something, and he was in the background looking kind of creepy.
Oh yeah,
Fauci. And then I said, you know, let's feature him let's caricature him in that Six Flags kind of way. And then I start like exaggerating, just doodling for fun, So by 8 o'clock in the morning, I finished my breakfast. I'm like, oh, this is an actual thing that I have to finish drawing now.
Yes.
And it's this horrifying, again, by accident. I wasn't intending. These are my warm-ups most of the time. And then it finished. I upload it, whatever.
New Woker. Oh. Yeah, Woker. Ian was furious. He was screaming. He was like, I want a picture of Fauci. And he's like punching holes in the wall. Like, Ian, stop, please.
And George does as Ian commands. That's how, and that's just how it works in the artistic community. Yeah. Ian wants something, not to bang you make the table, it.
Yeah. Yeah. Ian called George and... Get me the photograph. I want pictures of Dr. Fauci.
Then he got it.
That checks out, yeah.
I get what I want.
I love to serve.
Yeah, we got Lydia's pushing buttons.
I am. I'm pushing buttons in the corner. And it's going to be a great show. I'm loving all the artistic energy.
Yeah.
We have artists here and to talk about something cartoonishly ridiculous, which is a woman giving a lecture at Yale, a psychiatrist of all people.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the news, though, you guys, you got to go to timcast.com.
Of course.
And become a member to get access to exclusive members-only segment. Last night we did a full bonus episode where me and Seamus were screaming at each other. He punched me in the face.
Punched right in the face. You know? He deserved it.
But he didn't realize I had nunchucks under the table, so I sprung back up. It was a brutal and intense debate, and I got hurt.
Yeah, caught his wrist the chains.
Yeah, but then Ian had a whip.
It was
intense. Actually, Ian channeled plasma and fired a plasma ball at me, and I just flew out. There's a window behind me. You can't see because it's covered up. And I just flew 40 feet in the air.
How did you forget? How did you confuse that for having a whip?
Right.
Well, because he had both.
Struck by lightning, they said.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little out of it after I got hit in the forehead with the nunchucks, you know? But my hair is able to cover up the scar.
What really happened, and it looks like the internet might be working right now, is our internet literally got struck by lightning. Yeah. So, like, we had a guy come out, and he was like, this is a problem. And I was like, what happened? He's like... The cable underground is fried. And I was like, he's like, I think it got struck by lightning.
Whoa.
And I was like, whoa, it's fried.
I wonder if it was poorly insulated. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I don't know. Maybe
you just can't stop it, the lightning.
I don't know.
You can't stop the lightning.
It seems likely.
How about we talk about this crazy lady in the current state
of I think that's a little unfair.
What?
I wouldn't call her crazy.
Really?
Oh, okay. here's the story. So we pulled this up from The Federalist. Here's what I love. The Federalist is called Fake News by NewsGuard. But this story is like 100% legit. Over at Barry Weiss's Substack, Katie Herzog wrote about this, interviewed this person, and when The Federalist writes it up, they get called fake news, but it's like, it's 100% verifiable. Lecturer at official Yale event fantasizes about brutally murdering white people, claims all white people are rotten. I don't know if I can read what she said on YouTube.
I don't think you, but, well, let me just put it this way. It's not something somebody should be able to get away with saying on a college campus, considering the environment we're in politically, and also the fact that there have been mass shootings in educational settings repeatedly. It's kind of a horrible theme. How much can we divulge about what she said?
Well, I'll paraphrase.
Okay.
She said she wanted to take a weapon and unload it on any random white person she saw. She fantasizes about this.
Yes.
And I'm like, that is not well. And then she goes on to say that I think she said something like white people, like lie about food.
She said we're deranged.
Yeah, she said
after making this quote, which I will not repeat because I might botch it and get us demonetized, that white people are deranged. And her talk was on the psychopathic problem of the white mind. So I don't know what they expected her to say.
Is that actually the name of her lecture?
The psychopathic problem of the white mind. I don't know what they thought she was going to talk about or what she was going to say, but yes, it did involve using a weapon, against the head, placing it to the head of a person, and I'm not sure how much more I can say without getting in trouble here, Tim.
In an official lecture called The Psychopathic Problem of the White Mind, given by Aruna Kilanani.
Yeah.
Wow.
What a name.
At the Yale School of Medicine's Department of Child Study Center, Kilanani graphically described her fantasy about killing and burying white people. I'm not going to read the quote.
Normal college stuff.
Yeah, you know.
Sounds like slam poetry.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, she was just delivering a little slam poem. Dude.
Talk about murdering the English language.
Oh, my goodness. Fair enough. Well played.
So so obviously this lady's psychotic, and this is really... we're getting into seriously dangerous territory.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is that there are a lot of people, I think like Scott Adams, was talking about how all of the white privilege stuff was bubbling into, maybe it wasn't Scott Adams, but correct me if I'm wrong, talk about how like this rhetoric will lead to genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all these cartoonists making great points.
Yeah, that was Scott, right?
Yeah, that was Scott. Yeah.
And it's funny because like, I wouldn't say he's 100% right just yet. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm saying where we're at so far is it's escalated from white people are inherently racist to a lady saying she fantasizes about just randomly killing white people. And I'm like, yo, we're getting dangerously close. But we've already heard a lot of this. So many people probably know I was down on the ground in Wisconsin, and it was at like a Black Lives Matter protest, and they were screaming, get the white people, shoot the white people.
Wow.
We've heard a lot of that stuff at a lot of these events. So maybe we've already been at this point, but now it's institutionalized. Now you have Yale lecturer being straight up being like, this is what I want to fantasize about. This is what I do.
And this is what's insane. So she was previously a professor. She taught at Cornell, Columbia, and New York University, which is fantastic to have a professor going out there saying things like they want to kill people of a specific race. But also, she's a psychiatrist, which to me seems strange. I don't know that this is a person who I would want to go to for psychological help.
She likes... I can't even make some of these jokes.
I know. It's so over the top.
It's right there.
She said white people sound demented. And it's just crazy to me that she was able to get through this speech. You can't... All right. First of all, the thought of even going on a college campus and talking about intentionally harming people, being violent against them with a deadly weapon, I would imagine is enough to get you thrown off, even if it's not racially based. You're not, you know, talking about a specific group of people. It seems to me it's like saying bomb on an airplane or something. I can't believe
right.
You're...
There's a difference between telling people to do something and to say you fantasize about doing it. But I mean, there's now also kind of not
on.
Really a difference.
Come on. I know that this is like the cliche thing that every conservative says. Imagine if the situations were reversed. But seriously. Just imagine any professor going out there and picking out a racial minority and saying that they wanted to do this to them.
You'd get instantly banned.
Also, it would be on the front page of everything, and it would be used as an excuse to censor every other conservative.
So you're gonna love this. This is the caliber of people now lecturing at these universities. So in the interview, Katie says, "Could you give me an example of how this is picked up in all aspects of culture? How do you see the after effects of colonialism manifesting itself in the white mind today?" This woman, this crazy lady, says, "It's going to be hard for me to give you one sentence soundbite on this, but I would say a high level of guilt. I've never seen anything like this before other than in white people not eating bread. An incredible level of shame. What? Feeling really exposed all the time. A lot of perfectionist tendencies." And so somehow, like, it seems like Katie's trying to have, like, an honest conversation, but this lady's like, bread. They don't eat bread. And then she goes on to say, let me find... Like white, so it does seem like you generalize a lot, this is Katie, about white people, but also people of color. Why do you do that? And this woman says, why do you feel, what do you feel is a generalization? Katie asks, like white people having a high level of guilt or not eating bread. That's true for some people for sure, but I eat bread. And then she says, you don't think you're generalizing? The lady goes on, and somehow it comes back to this. Sure, this is Katie. There are a lot of white people who don't eat bread, although I am not one of them. I exclusively eat bread. I don't think Katie exclusively eats bread. However, she goes on, also I'm skeptical of some claims of gluten intolerance, but my assumption has always been that they're just buying into pseudoscientific BS and following health needs. You think it's white guilt? The lady goes, on an emotional level, absolutely. Like, if I raise an eyebrow at a white person around bread, the first response is like, it's real. What does that mean? They mean it's not psychological. Right, it's a medical issue, not a mental one, says Katie. The lady goes, I don't deny that people may get symptoms, but how is it that all these people suddenly now, after all the violence has occurred, are not eating bread? It's like the weirdest effing thing. Katie says, but what does bread have to do with violence? What's the connection there? I think the bread is about guilt and needing
enough
to keep them in a state of deprivation and stay guilty. Okay. That's the famous bread section of this lady's interview.
That's brilliant.
Now, could you imagine paying that person to go to a college and teach your children? You may notice white people not eating bread. Why? Because they're racist.
Guess what I want to do to them. This is what we have to do to white people for not eating bread, ladies and gentlemen. This is the only solution. You heard about that socialists want bread lines. Guess what? Something much worse. We don't want anyone having any bread.
Bro,
dude, Yale didn't release the footage, obviously, for good reason. And she claims it's because they're trying to suppress her. It's like,
could you imagine, like, she's in a Starbucks and the lady's like...
The message needs to be censored.
I know, like, the message needs to be
it's
put out
too
there.
It's too real.
The part of me wonders if, like, Yale is just kind of trying to help her by downplaying this because they know the more it gets out there, the worse this person's life is going to be. I'm not sure what Yale's motivations are. Maybe they're helping her with their silence, as Dave Chappelle would say, or did say.
This is the kind of thing where it's like, this lady will be in a subway or something, and someone will be like, do you have anything without bread? And then she looks at it and goes, like, you remember Body Snatchers when Donald Sutherland, like, she's not eating bread, it proves it. I thought Ibram X. Kendi's thing was crazy when he was like, denying racism is proof of racism. I was like, well, that's nuts. Now we've got, I'm sorry, this is crazier. If you don't eat bread, you're racist.
I just realized
I have to eat bread.
Also, I'm black. Wait a second. Okay, so coming over here, driving, right? I had in my car cold cuts, pastrami, turkey, listen, in a Ziploc bag, and I'm reaching into the Ziploc bag with my bare hands and eating the cold cuts, no bread.
So you're racist.
I'm black.
But that's actually cultural appropriation because you are racist.
Yeah, she said if you don't.
I've only been black for a little while.
No, if you don't eat bread, you're racist.
Yeah. Wait,
she's not saying white people eat bread. She's saying white people don't. So it's racist to not eat bread. So am I correct here? I'm trying to figure out the rules right now. I don't want this lady to come to my house.
Remember when milk was racist?
Yes, it was for quite a while.
So weird.
Now you only get lactate.
Well, it's because Asian people don't drink milk, I guess.
Black people don't either.
Really?
Yeah, is that a thing?
Yeah, it is. Actually, it is. Yeah, in other countries, people tend to lose their tolerance for milk as they mature.
Oh, I've heard this, actually.
White people don't, for whatever reason.
There are definitely genetic differences, you know, like sickle cell anemia seems to have strike the African-American community harder than other, you know, genetic races or whatever.
That's not true. None of that's true.
Yeah, sickle cell anemia was, like, notably found in like, African culture.
No, race is social construct, Ian.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah,
I have nowhere to go from here.
But my point was, the door's right there.
Maybe certain people are more sensitive to gluten tolerance. I don't know. Is there something to that? I've never heard that before. Is there some racist of people or anything?
Italian ice.
Yeah,
that's a good alternative to ice cream.
You know what they do now?
That's racist.
They make bread out of mushroom.
Yeah, she's talking about gluten, right? Not bread. I have no idea.
I'm so lost. I have no idea what she's talking about. I have no idea what she's talking about. Wait, I'm so confused about this woman, other than she's ridiculously violent.
Did you get your
white
privilege check in the mail this week, though?
I did not.
I didn't.
Oh, wow.
Who's the king of white? Is it Trump? Does Trump send out the checks?
Yes.
I got an email from Trump, and he was like, Tim, no, you're not white. I'm sorry. Oh. You're part Asian. You don't get a check. Seamus, you get two.
Seamus gets Tim's check.
How do we pay for our $2 million apartment? Yeah, without the white privilege check?
Right. Oh, my God.
I'm going to eat only bread. I can't afford anything else.
Is OK Boomer Girl white?
I have no idea.
Because I think like they just now will say they are or they aren't, even if they are.
She's Latinx, though.
Latinx.
Latinx.
Like Kleenex, yeah.
Yeah, like Kleenex.
Is that how it's pronounced? Latinx or is it Latinx? Yeah, I don't know.
Like Kleenex.
Latinx?
Yeah. Okay. Like Latino, Latina, that's Latinx.
That's great. And how many Latino people actually
Latina. Want this? 3%, I think it is.
Yeah, exactly.
3%.
There
women.
We go. There we go. Yes, college women. It's white college women mostly, too, are probably pushing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely.
Everything has to be cleansed, including language.
Yep.
They love it when you cleanse their language.
Yeah, people from other cultures love when white people come around and tell them that their culture is actually insensitive.
I have my Latinx friends that I have to go over to their house and just like, hey, I heard you talking in your fake language that's not real anymore.
But hold on. Like, where is the person just kind of roll with this to like go to one of these meetings or hang out with some woke people and just absolutely play into it?
Oh, that was what art school was for me too.
So when they say like Latinx, you go, oh, honey, no, we don't say Latinx anymore because it's not inclusive of, name X group. And be like, so now we say Latini. Yeah, and then what are they going to say to you? They're going to be like, you don't want to be a racist, do you?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how come no one does that? Just goes in there and just, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe all this.
That's why it's getting so ridiculous. It's actually people who don't even believe the stuff trying to screw with them. Oh, the whole maybe. Thing's a prank. Yeah.
Well, come on, man. Have you seen like there were activists in Canada complaining about Chick-fil-A? And I was covering the story and I was reading an article. It was like the activists literally wrote the LGBTQIA LGBTQIAtrobfn2+Q.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to remember the best. I'm getting wrong, but it was like 15 or 16 letters.
Yes.
And so when I'm reading it, I'm like, the activists wrote this message saying, we stand in solidarity with the LGBTQIAP2+TROBNYX3 community. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I literally have no idea what that means. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm literally like, I don't know the message you're trying to convey to me about Chick-fil-A.
There's too many letters there.
You gotta learn the code.
Right. And then there's another one. There's another code. That's like trans indigenous.
Oh my god!
Yeah, trans indigenous people of color and like other. It's like Tipakani or something like that.
Like at some point, you lose the entire purpose of having a group. And the point of an acronym is you're supposed to keep it short, right? It's supposed to be something that like everyone can just say
easy to remember.
Like, and also, it's supposed to refer to like a limited group of people. So you start tacking on all these letters, and it defeats the entire purpose.
Like the Fired Act. That one was Fauci incompetence requires early dismissal.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fire the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but That's why I'm confused, because I wonder why it is people don't speak up and just say outright, like, this is, like, not communicable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is you're conveying.
Oh, they're scared. All of them are scared. That's the thing, too. I wonder how many of them actually believe this, because I met a number of people. Again, I was sort of joking earlier about art school, but I met a number of people who, behind closed doors, wouldn't say all this far-left stuff. In fact, they would agree with me that the left has gone off the deep end. A lot of the other students were really too far to the left and made them feel uncomfortable to voice their own opinions. But and then I guess I ended up wondering, is that really true, or do you just kind of say whatever the group is saying, and so now that you're around me, you're saying something you think I might agree with? It's hard to know, but I imagine there's a large number of these people who do think it's way over the top, who do think it's a little silly. Maybe they believe in the cause, but they think all these extra letters are ridiculous, but they're just not going to say it because they're terrified.
Well, you know what will happen if these people do? It's not even necessarily about getting canceled. It's about just a net detriment to their lives.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to get put down as the racist. You don't want to have to be lectured at and educated by your friends.
It's not even that.
Or homophobe.
It's,
sorry.
I won't get a speaking position, or I'll get a worse grade, or people will start saying mean things about me on Facebook. It's just like, I don't want to deal with the stress.
This woman lecturing at Yale will point a weapon at me. Do you think she graded white students fairly?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. Which she's like F. she has F. a name, and it's you. like Patrice, McDonald, and she's like F. And then the woman walks in, and she's actually not white, and she's like, and she turns into an A. She just draws a line. It's an A now. She's like, I'm so sorry. It reminds me of that South Park episode where Michael Jackson moves to South Park.
Ignorant.
And the cops are like, a wealthy black man moved in, so they like raid the house, and then the cops like, wait a minute. He's not black, he's white. And they're like, my God, what have we done? They like regret it. Yeah. This is the nature of the culture war these days.
Wait, was that the same episode when they had the crosses?
No.
Yeah, the
no,
okay. No, no,
no.
No,
that
no.
was different.
Time to leave.
That was when it's called that one was called Here Comes the Neighborhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was about all the wealthy, like, celebrity black families moving in.
Man, old South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new South Park's like not even
the good stuff, man. We had the best childhood as far as like cartoons go.
I wasn't allowed to watch that stuff, man. I don't know whose childhood you're talking about.
90s babies.
What were the raciest cartoons you saw?
Well, as a kid, I mean, like, I wasn't really, I think I mentioned this before, I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons, but I started watching it as I got a little bit older. I think once I was like 10 or 11, my parents didn't care about it as much, but didn't have cable, so I couldn't watch a lot of that
the
stuff.
The early
anyway,
seasons of
South
Simpsons
Park.
Were the best, and then
absolutely.
To trail off.
No, I'm a huge fan. I've watched basically every episode until like maybe season 25 or something. It's horrible now. I'm sure you know that.
No, yeah. We had like Adult Swim back in the day. Like
I would stay at my cousin's house. Yeah.
I was thinking about MTV cartoons from like Daria is one of my favorite cartoons of all time, for instance. So dry, so
I've heard good things.
Sarcastic. It's it's actually no, not Mike Judge. All right, so Beavis and Butthead was Mike Judge.
Yeah, it's a spinoff, right? Because she's
right.
A character.
It was a spinoff, right? But it's very smart comedy. Mm-hmm. I like the nowadays. Like, I don't actually love the Seth MacFarlane stuff so much anymore. Mm-mm. It's more like gaggish.
Yeah, 100%.
As opposed to I don't know. Cultural commentary.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, gags are great to take you through something really short, but when it's like 22 minutes long and I'm supposed to be roped into a story, I kind of stop caring about it when my attention is brought in every different direction for some short, cheap joke. So I hear you.
Well,
on
especially
that.
With the MacFarlane stuff, I think they have a thing where every 10 seconds or something we have to do a joke, even if it's a flashback. Well, that reminds me of the time I.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really advance the story
you guys,
at all.
ADD comedy or something.
You guys, you got to understand this lecture at Yale. You know, she's fighting very serious mainstream oppression.
That's true.
Yeah, I know.
You know, just recently we have this viral video, this viral meme that's been going around for some time.
That's true.
Skittles. I don't know if you guys know that. Skittles.
Oh, boy.
This is a tough
absolutely,
one.
Absolutely. It's a neo-Nazi organization.
Racist.
Company.
Racist so, company.
Wait, Taste the Rainbow?
We have this
not
photo.
Anymore.
We're not tasting the rainbow.
We have this photo, and it's a bag of Skittles. It's all white, and it says Skittles White Pride.
It's literally.
It's what Skittles Wait, White
the
Pride.
The Skittles are white.
For Pride
gray?
Month.
They're literally white.
They're white
and it
Skittles,
says
bro.
And it says on the not the Skittles bag, but on the label at the Spar store, it says Skittles White Pride.
It says that?
Yes.
It does, yeah.
They want to do something unique for Pride Month.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
So but think about this, like, okay, Skittles. joking aside, Skittles thought it was appropriate to remove all of the colored ones to replace all of the Skittles with just white ones. I'm like, That is the stupidest marketing campaign I have ever heard of.
Here's the thing. It is really dumb. But then again, we are talking about them. Every single company does this Pride Month stuff. And I guess Skittles is like, we're going to shake it up. And what did they say? This is the shake it up. Like, this is the only rainbow that matters. Or they said something, only one rainbow matters this month.
So,
and I'm thinking the promise God made to not flood the earth again, because that's what the rainbow is for, but then it got stolen, and now it's just a cheap marketing gimmick that every company uses in June. A lot of fun.
Can we just, Skittles? Like, they made a bag of white Skittles. They removed the colored Skittles. I don't know what they were thinking this was supposed to be. They should have just been like, you know, like, this is the rainbow, whatever.
June is the perfect month for Skittles. Taste the rainbow. Come on, guys.
Exactly. They could be like, look, we were supporting Pride all along since the brand started existing. We've always been about the rainbow. That's what we were trying to tell you guys.
Wait. Here's what's funny, right? So you see all these brands change their Twitter accounts?
Yeah.
So they put, like, you know, rainbow logos. Going. But then in Saudi Arabia, they don't.
Yeah.
Skittles decided to go the complete other direction. Because, like, it's one thing to change your logo. It's one thing to do nothing. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to be like Skittles White Pride.
I see where they were, what they meant. Because, you know, when you look at white, you have white light and white pigment. White pigment is just white pigment with no other color. White light is all the color together. So in a rainbow, you mix all the colors together, you get white light, which isn't really white. It's just clear. There is no, you know, you can't see color.
I don't think they were thinking that.
No. Well, obviously not.
Smart.
I think they were just
they didn't have a scientist on board.
That's right.
It was just probably some 23-year-old kid who was like sitting there like, why don't we take the rainbow out and then make all of the Skittles white?
Like, that's
like,
a really good idea.
That's so
that's
smart.
Inclusive.
His co-workers like, that's really smart, man.
Dude, you were thinking.
You got a future here.
You ever hear the story of how Hot Cheetos, Flamin' Hot Cheetos got made?
Negative.
No.
I think it was like a – you know the story?
I was going to say Hillary Clinton got to him.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. That's awesome.
No. It was
it's in my back?
Hot sauce. This is a crazy story. Apparently, it was like a janitor, right? And the CEO or something put out a company-wide message saying, we respect all of our employees. You know, to that being said, if anybody has any ideas, we're always listening. And so this one dude who worked there, he would always take the dry Cheetos with no cheese on them, and they were extras. He'd bring them home, and he would put chili powder on them and shake them up. And it was a lot like some kind of Mexican snack. Not necessarily elotes, but something like that. And so then when his family started trying it, they were like, you should tell them. And so then apparently he, like, made a video or something and sent it in. And everybody at the company was like, what are you doing? Don't send this. The CEO isn't serious. And then when they got the message and they saw this and they realized that people really liked the snack, they were like, let's try making it. Let's make it. And it's like the number one, or it became the number one, like, chip snack that was sold in stores. So this guy got promoted, became this high level six figure dude. They really meant it. It's one of the coolest stories ever.
Yeah, that is great actually.
This one's gotta be the opposite. Like, some kid's like, I got a really good idea for diversity and pride. Get rid of all of the colored Skittles.
You know, here's the question, though. I mean, we're making fun of them for it, but has this been negatively received? Are they doing well?
I tweeted an image that says Skittles White Pride.
Oh, my God.
I don't think Skittles is having a good day of this.
Maybe. You never know, dude. People could buy into it. They could be like, this is a great Skittles. That was very brave Skittles. Dude, I wish I was a multi. I was a multi-million dollar corporation so I could, like, fight oppression with, like, junk mail about BLM and Pride.
I'm sure you're right that there are many identitarians who are cheering this, just like the left cheers for all their little corporate logos. I'm sure there are a certain sect of a certain racial identitarian group that's very happy that Skittles made a white Pride bag.
You know, this is a problem.
Dude,
I have
all their logos are white, by the way. I just looked at their Twitter.
Oh, did they change it to gray? Did they change them to gray as part of the backlash?
Oh, bro, this is the worst thing ever. They also, their top tweet right now, our most recent tweet, second most recent, is, hey, Samsung girl. They get us fellow kids, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys see this? The Samsung girl that everyone was like,
that's
going to
end really well.
Reason.
Oh, they made them gray. They changed it. They made the Skittles gray.
That was fast. Yeah. We were ready.
Well, I think calling them colored Skittles was probably the mistake in the first place.
I would say so, yeah.
I have an inappropriate joke. Can I say it?
No.
How?
No, there's like a scale. Is it family friendly?
Yeah.
No. You know what? It's my reputation on the line. What do you call colored Skittles?
Oh, no.
No.
Delicious.
Don't do this.
Delicious, yes.
Don't do this.
Ian was correct.
This is a problem I have with calling people. Oh, wait. Do you want to answer that joke? I think it's too risky.
No, we're not.
Let's save the punchline. Let's save the punchline for the after show. Oh, wait. Is there going to be an after show?
Oh, right. There's no after show on Fridays.
Oh, yeah. You get it easy.
Let me derail this one real quick.
I didn't even say the joke. All right.
Derail it quick, Ian.
This is a problem I have with calling people black and white. is that firstly, we're not. And then when people try and market like white candy, all of a sudden it's considered racist, which is insane.
Because there are also, no white people. It's the stupidest thing. It's stupid.
Yeah. Agreed. I think it was. I don't think it was just that it was just white candy, but like white. If people were upset about this, I think like the combination of white and pride together might have.
Yeah, we had.
People were upset. Isn't this supposed to have to do with sex somehow?
Sexuality?
Yeah, the rainbow taste.
Talk about tasting the rainbow.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's pretty good.
Every joke I have is rated R.
Come on, George.
Ian is wearing the. Are you wearing the OG gorilla shirt?
This is the OG. I am a gorilla. Let me stand up and get this on.
So when we first made this shirt, many of you may not be familiar. The shirt was misprinted, where for some reason Teespring made the face of the gorilla darkened black, but only the inside of the face, so it looked like it was paint. And the hands were white, which makes no sense because it's just a gorilla. And it was like, what a weird thing to do to paint the face of the gorilla black and give him white hands.
Terrible.
Strange. And so it created this huge controversy. And then, you know, Teespring fixed it and apologized. But I was pissed off. A lot of people were messaging me saying, like, why is there a blackface gorilla shirt? Like, yeah. what is this? And I'll be like, dude, clearly we don't sell that. That is not, it's just meant to be a meme about the show. It's an inside joke about Alex Jones. And then I started getting lefties. Once I called it out saying, like, this is not our mistake, the lefties were like, having a gorilla t-shirt was racist enough.
Oh. What?
No joke.
That's
and I was
extremely
like,
racist
I
to
know,
say.
I know.
That's a ridiculously racist thing to say.
Apes together strong, never forget.
I was like, dude, it's like Magilla Gorilla isn't a race thing. It's a cartoon. It's like having a shirt that's I'm a gorilla was a reference to Ishmael. Is no reference to race. If you see that and think race, man, you got problems.
You have serious problems.
These people say they're racist. Like Robin DiAngelo. She wrote a book about it. She says she's racist. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. They're not lying.
That's true. She walked into a party and saw the group of black people and said, you know what? I'm scared of those
That's
people.
A true story, though. She said that. True. She literally wrote that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's like a foremost expert and lecturer on critical race theory. She wrote in her book that when she goes to parties with black people, she's uncomfortable around them. And
what?
I'm like, dude, lady.
What a
like,
weird thing to say.
Original sin, man.
Yeah. Yeah. People, like most people don't feel that way. That's so weird. I don't know, man. Is this something I'm missing? Like, I grew up in Chicago, so I don't have, like, I don't think of the world that way, and she's from the suburbs or something?
I mostly grew up in the suburbs, and I don't feel that way. I think it's just a weird putting race on a pedestal type thing where you're gonna evaluate people on that basis for better or for worse. I mean, it's the way the left has said that we should analyze people, and she's on the left, so that's how she's going to look at everybody. She's going to put them in those categories, and if she feels uncomfortable, maybe it just becomes, well, I must be uncomfortable because of that person's race, because I've internalized racism. Or maybe she actually just, like, straight up is racist. I don't know.
I'll tell you this. I went to...
Yes, she obviously is, of course, but you get what I mean.
I was in Thailand during Chinese New Year in, I think, 2014, and I was standing in this market where there were, like, thousands of people all in the streets doing their thing. I could see clean all the way, like everybody was shorter than me. Mm-hmm. So I was standing, you know, with my friends, and I had clear field of view all the way down the market. And it's an interesting thing, you know, when these people say that like race is a social construct, and then you go to Thailand and you're like, then I go to Scandinavia and I'm in a crowd and I can't see anything at all because everyone's 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. No, it's true though.
You just thought they were because you internalized racism.
But I wonder if a big component of this, of like Robin DiAngelo's fear, is that she's never been. You know what I mean? Like, she's never actually interacted with these people. And so if these people who think race doesn't exist ever actually traveled to another country, they might be like, hey, like, people here tend to be a little shorter. People here tend to be a little taller. And hey, guess what? In America, race is not you have no reason to be uncomfortable. It's like the weirdest thing to be uncomfortable about, in my opinion. Like, mm-hmm. What about that does she not feel comfortable with? You know what I mean?
Reminds me of male feminists. Who want to hang out around other women. Like, listen, I'm a pig. When I'm around you, the thoughts that are in my head, let me just tell you for a half
hour.
He's
like, you know what?
I
was tempted to say you shouldn't vote when I first walked into the room.
You know how inappropriate it would be if I said this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aren't men such pigs?
The guy's in the party.
Well, it really is the equivalent. Yeah.
The guy, one of these male feminists is in a party, and he's looking at the women, and he goes, I just think we should repeal the 19... I'm sorry.
I can't help it. Yeah, I was at a party, and I saw women, and I thought it was wrong of me, but it's what I thought.
I just wanted to end women's suffrage.
Haven't they suffraged enough?
Suffrage.
Yeah, yes. They definitely have.
Some would say so.
Man, that's...
I think you're right about DeAngelis not being familiar. It, rather than be like, it's because of the race, I'm uncomfortable. It's if you don't if it's unfamiliar to you, yeah, it might see, you might be uncomfortable with something new, whether it's the height, the skin tone, the way that the posture of the body is.
I don't think that's what she was saying, though.
Yeah, but it's weird. I think maybe she's just like never met a black person before she wrote these books.
That I can understand. If you grow up in a cloistered environment around one color and size of human, and then you go to an environment where a bunch of all humans are a different shape and size and color.
Why size? She grew up in the Shire, bro?
Probably, yeah. she is like a hobbit.
Came out of her little hobbit hole.
I don't feel uncomfortable going to Thailand, like noticing that, you know, people were shorter than me. Like,
Also,
it's meaningless.
She might have been beat up as a kid, not even just racially. Mm. Just she might have been abused as a child, so she has fear in general in her life, unresolved fear or something.
I think it's just that she's racist, but you have closed communities that have negative views, and then you have elitist racist views. So, like, she probably grew up in this hoity-toity, like, white community with her mom being like, oh, you know, talk down to people, condescend, you're so much better, and... It, like, the whole ideology of these people is that they are better. Like, no joke. It is a form of white supremacy. Not in the same sense they try to convey, right? Mm-hmm. So their version of white supremacy makes little sense. They're like prejudice plus power.
Yes.
But when you think about the core of their ideology, that they think that white people hold special privileged positions and have more power and more control, and they literally tell minorities they can't succeed, I'm like, bro, I think you're a white supremacist. You know what I mean?
Well, I think for some of them what it is, it's sort of the phenomena you see with the kid who didn't do that poorly on a test, but they complain about how poorly they did. Like, they want you to think that they think their grade is bad. So someone will get like an A- and go, oh, I did so bad on this. And then you ask how they did and they got an A-. So they're saying they did something bad, but it's really for the purpose of signaling how great they are. That's kind of what I think.
It's not, nice
oh, I was racist, but I'm aware of it.
You're talking about Asians, right?
What?
Maybe.
How they get A's instead of A pluses. And then, I'm sorry. It's funny to me. It's very funny to me. I had a friend who was Chinese, valedictorian, amazing grades, perfect, right? Cried about getting an A- on one of her finals. I'm like, are you kidding me? I would kill to have a C on anything. That's the end of my joke, but it's not a joke.
That's totally true.
Yeah.
Asians are smarter.
Hold on. But think about this. You grew up in a household where you feel shame for not getting a perfect score. You know?
Oh, yeah. The strictness, in reality, the strictness of these parents. Are, well, it's like
if you're happy with getting a C like George and I, you become a cartoonist.
Have you ever played those, like, mobile games where you gotta, like, it's like a puzzle game? There's one game I play sometimes. It's like you press the start button and water comes out, but you have to, like, draw a ramp to, like, get the water to go into the bucket.
Dude, I see those ads constantly.
Okay, now hold on. So, like, it's I've heard it's called, but, like, a water faucet, you'll draw a picture. Like, you can draw lines, and the water follows the line. You try to get to, like, ramp up into the bucket, and you have to get 3 stars. When I get 2 stars, I redo the level. Mm. I'm like, you didn't beat the level unless you get all 3 stars. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. That's not how I work.
You just get 1 star.
Ian's like,
I'll do it all of them first, and then I'll go back and, like, try and get 3 stars on the ones that I didn't.
Bro, you should have seen me beat Sonic the Hedgehog earlier. I didn't care how many rings I got. I was like, to the end of the level.
Yeah, see, I have to get literally every ring in the game, otherwise I start the whole thing over. not that much.
You unplug the arcade machine.
But it's like, I've got one game where you have, like, a little guy and he does a backflip, and you tap the screen and he jumps, and you tap it again and he tucks, and then you let go, and then he lands the backflip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I gotta get in the ring perfect max score every time, and if I don't, I just keep restarting until I do it. It's frustrating. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if I don't get a perfect score, I didn't beat the level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to cry about it.
Do you think that's a nature or nurture thing? I've always...
Man. This is interesting. I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But I definitely grew up in a household where before I even started kindergarten, my mom was teaching me math and reading.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I started kindergarten. I knew multiplication and division and long division, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, all the other kids were like, 2 + 2 = 4. And I was like, 27 times 493. Like, I could do the math, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's a cultural thing.
Did your parents expect, like, greatness out of you and punish, or not punish you, but, like, be like, it wasn't good enough if you didn't get the perfect score? Or were they just kind of, like, hands
level,
off?
At the video game, they made him replay video game levels if he didn't beat it completely.
No, but there was this game we used to play in first grade called Around the World.
Oh, I love that game. Yeah.
You know what it is? Like, so you stand up at your desk, and then you stand behind the person with your hands on their shoulder, and then the teacher would do a flashcard.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my brother would never lose, so the teacher would eventually ask us to stop playing.
Oh, man.
Because it's, like, first grade, awesome. Show the card, and be like, boom, I know the answer. 7. Mm-hmm. 14, 3,
Isn't so, that like, ridiculous? What an example of how public schools busted. The smart kids can't play.
This was Catholic school.
Even Catholic schools busted. The kids that are so good can't participate because they ruin it for everyone else.
What are they supposed to do?
I don't know. Like, I had the same thing in typing class.
They're like, Tim, we get it. You know your math. Have a nice day. Like, you won. Here's your prize. Now go play with your prize.
I don't know.
The other kids got to learn math too. So what is it? It's interesting, right? So I'm literally Asian and I'm good at math.
I've had this theory for a long time.
It offends me that you said that, Tim.
I'm allowed to say it.
Well, I grew up around a lot of Asian kids just in the area that I lived in. So I would go to their houses and see how their parents interacted with them a lot. And I had this theory of, like, from certain countries when they were immigrant parents, they understood how hard it was to climb the social ladder, let's say. A lot of immigrants start with very little, let's say. So their parents know, like, you have to study ultra hard. I'm going to push my kids super duper hard because we're going to like leapfrog up. You're not just going to be a normal person. I'm going to like train my kid to be like, for instance, I grew up, I won't say the towns, but I used to tutor kids after school and stuff with art and whatnot. A lot of Asian parents would not let their kids come home after school. You have piano practice, art practice, whatever, all kinds of different practices. They would push their kids. You weren't even allowed to come home. You had to go to the library after school. Like, I noticed the way that they raised their kids a lot, and the kids resent it at first. They kick so much butt as they get older. Mm-hmm.
I do remember, you know, when I was a kid, like, my mom, like, drew a picture. It said, if at first you don't succeed, try again, and, like, that messaging. I also remember being, like, 13 and trying to learn how to kickflip. Mm-hmm. And by choice, I stood outside my house for, like, 8 hours every day. Kickflip, heel flip, like skateboard tricks, right? So heel flip is when you pop the board and then with your heel, you kick it and it flips. One day I could just do it. It was like it came naturally to me. Everybody kind of has the tricks they're just natural at. Mm-hmm. But kickflip, like one of the most basic tricks everybody can do, I struggled with. And no one made me do it. There was no prize. There was no parent sitting there saying, you have to land it. It was just like one day I went outside with my board for 8 hours just trying. And I was frustrated. And I was angry. I could never get it. It made no sense to me. And then I remember the first day I finally landed it. And I landed it crooked. And I was like, yeah, I did it. No one told me to do it. There was no – I wasn't forced to do it. I got no prize for it other than my own. So I wonder – you know, I think everything's a little bit of nature and nurture.
Yeah.
And for me especially, there was – I don't think there was something in my life that – I can't recall other than maybe just being around hardworking parents that maybe I don't realize how much that really rub off on me. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot about me, obviously, where I'm just like, I have to do it. It has to be perfect.
Yeah, it's similar with me in drawing and stuff, and I'm sure, Seamus, you can agree. There's a certain satisfaction to setting a goal for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And then realizing, wait, I did that, but nobody taught me how to do it. Mm-hmm. There's just some miracle of this feeling of hard work equals results, and if I keep doing this one thing over and over, like, I'm a huge fan of the 10,000 hour rule, let's say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If anyone asks me, how do I get good at drawing? It's like, well, have you drawn 10,000 hours? Mm-hmm. Get started, or continue down the road. But that lesson, I don't think it's necessarily racial in the sense of, like, it can be passed from parents to kids or something like that. I don't think, maybe some people are born with it, some aren't, but I don't like that there's a cultural excuse of where I'm born in a position where let's say some people are more ahead of me than I am. I don't like the excuse of, well, I'm just not going to try because I was given a bad hand at birth. Or
that's the narrative of the left, man.
Yeah. But it's
not your fault. Don't try.
But it's such a lie. It's such a you're playing yourself if you think that you are not in control of your future. If you keep trying to do something, just one thing, pick one thing you love.
Yeah.
Just keep doing it, and eventually, like, I didn't make my big break or whatever in cartooning until 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'd been drawing, I made my debut or whatever back in 2006.
Exactly.
I couldn't get a job in comics until 2 years ago.
It takes
a lot of people don't know this, but before Seamus started Freedom Tunes, it was Commie Tunes.
It was Commie Tunes. I was actually a far left activist, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to try to be a little bit more moderate, so I made Biden Tunes. And I've said this before,
which is good,
which is better. But then at one point, I was like, you know what? I've got an idea. Let's try Freedom Tunes, and I'm here today. But I mean, I agree
with you. The grift paid off. You finally
Funny because it takes a really long time to become successful in anything, and for me it wasn't just drawing. I mean, I'm pretty mediocre at just like the raw art of like drawing something photorealistic. I'm much more into cartooning. I used to be a lot better at drawing in college when I was doing it consistently, but the point is, for me, the payoff was trying to see how quickly I could get something done that looked decent. And that skill set obviously turned out to pay out for me because we're uploading stuff all the time, and that's a huge strategy for our growth. But yeah, I hear that. And on the other hand, there's very much a nurture component to it. How much were you pushed as a kid to not give up? How many virtues were you instilled with? But there is a nature part of it, which is how interested are you in the thing
passion.
To begin with? Exactly. Yeah.
I think parents can give kids drive. I think
absolutely.
If parents just make their kids stick to something, it helps.
Mm-hmm. And whatever gets your butt in that seat for 10,000 hours, honestly.
I was told that I could do it, which is why I believed I could. Otherwise, I never would have tried.
Okay. My parents never pushed me to do art. Or actually, it's a funny thing. I was told to do
your
everything.
Your parents never pushed you to do art?
Nobody pushed me.
No, I'm giving you a hard time. I mean, most people's parents are like, please don't do art. Do
it's
anything besides art.
My whole life, it's been that story. No, for real. Like, I tried to go to art school. And they're like, why don't you go to, real school?
Exactly.
Can you get a real degree and then just do art on the side? But there was just something in me that said, I have to do this. And this is the only thing I can do. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at anything else.
I think one of the biggest problems with modern society, especially for young people, is the obsession with college. Mm-hmm. So after Occupy Wall Street and I'm featured in, I get all this press, I'm featured in magazines. I still had family being like, will you go to college now?
Yeah.
And I was like, No, I'm going to college right now. I'm on my way.
How old were you?
25.
Okay.
I was like, I'm going to college right now. I'm on my way to give a guest lecture to the PhD course on journalism.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you think I would learn when I'm the one being brought in to teach these people things they don't know?
Dude, Stephen Colbert got an honorary degree. After he was just Stephen Colbert the goofball on TV. Mm-hmm. They were like, we love him so much, we're going to give him a college degree for that.
I know art school dropouts who, they dropped out of art school and then later they got a degree, honorary degree, something like that, and they ended up teaching at that school.
Art school's a weird thing. You should really only go to it for the skills you're going to pick up. The degree probably isn't going to
That and
a lot
networking.
Networking is the biggest advantage to it.
We kind of veered off in this direction.
Sure.
I wanted to stop before and move into the ramifications of having a worldview built upon you can't succeed because the world is the problem. So one of the key things is core elements of the culture war. One side says you can do better, mm-hmm. and find your path towards victory. The other side says there is no path because the world is bad and the world must change for you.
Yeah.
Which brings me to this story from the Daily Mail. Quote, it's like living in Palestine. Minneapolis is renamed Murderapolis under police city pay the price in blood for violence that has skyrocketed since the death of George Floyd. So they go on to mention 211 people have suffered gunshot wounds, up mm-hmm. from 81 last year. More than 200 cops have left or are leaving, signing off or on disability. More than 300 people gathered at the site of Ania's fatal shooting for a peace walk, a call from the community to put down the guns and pick up the love. What's happening now is I've experienced with Occupy Wall Street. I've experienced it with these activists. When you keep telling people over and over again, there's literally nothing you can do to succeed. What happens? People
they don't
give
succeed,
up.
Believe it or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, they don't succeed. But some people decide, okay, then I'll take. Mm-hmm. Then you get crime, you get violence. Then they demand the system change. And, we see a lot of these stories about police brutality and police shootings. There's a story right now. So in Minneapolis the other night, they were rioting. Why? Because an armed fugitive who was arrested 20 times and had multiple felonies, U.S. Marshals tried to stop him. They said he drew a gun. They shot and killed him. Of course, then they start rioting. And one guy is caught on camera, and they ask him what he's here for. And he says, believe it or not, I forgot the guy's name. He's like, I'm not going to lie. I don't remember the guy's name. They clearly have no idea what they're talking about. So in a sense, it's kind of sad. They don't know why they're doing what they're doing other than it's the only thing they were told they could do to affect change. These are people who were never told when they were younger, you got to keep trying until you figure it out. If you're trying to find a path towards victory and it's not working, try a new path. These are people who were told there isn't one. You will never succeed. And so what do? They just go out and smash.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's a huge cause of crime, right? People believing that there's nothing they can do to improve their material circumstances within the system. They have to break the rules in order to get ahead. And so if your view of the world is that the only way you're ever going to make something of yourself or achieve any level of status is by hurting other people, guess what? You're going to hurt other people. You're going to take their stuff.
Or just destroy things and burn it down because if I can't have it, no one have.
Yeah.
No one can have it.
Well, yep. You're just you're hurting the insurance companies. You're not.
Yeah, exactly. I'm
That's
so
what
glad.
They think.
I'm so glad insurance was invented so we could just burn down anything for any reason and no one gets hurt. There's no victim. I just want to mention this about insurance. There are people who have literally gone into debt just cleaning up the debris from their place of work or the business they own being destroyed in a riot, and the insurance check didn't even cover that. So they went into debt without even getting to reopen their business. Will pay for it.
But let's not forget, you ever go to a pizza restaurant and you see a picture of like the owner and he's with like Tony Danza and he's giving a thumbs up? That photo's never coming back. You can't get insurance for that photograph, but let's be a little less silly. The first dollar, everyone frames their first dollar they put up on the wall.
Yeah.
The first dollar that comes in, never getting that back. Mm-hmm. Let's say the guy had a painting from his mom on the wall, never getting that back. Let's say his mom died and the last thing she gave him after she died was this beautiful painting and he says, I want to see this painting every day in my shop. And they threw a brick through his window and they burned it down. Insurance will never pay for that.
Exactly. Well, and also profit margins are very thin. So even if you're lucky enough to have your insurance company pay for it, your rates are going to increase and it's possible your rates will increase so much that you're not going to be able to afford to operate in that area anymore. So fewer people are going to open shop in that area. The only people who will be able to afford to will be massive businesses. So you're just hurting the little guy in the end.
Yeah. This is what happens when, you know, people are told throughout their whole life there is nothing. And that's the danger of this white privilege ideology, these leftists, and they talk about white privilege. Like we talked about this last week or whatever when Chris Rufo was challenged by that guy Mark Lamont Hill. Because, you know, he was saying they're trying to say whiteness is all bad. And then Mark Lamont Hill is like, it was Mark Lamont Hill, I think his name. And he's like, tell me one good thing you like about being white. And Chris Rufo was like, I reject that framework. Mm-hmm. Like, as if race is the component. Mm-hmm. And he's right. That dude who was interviewing him views the world through you, by nature of being white, have something. This is critical race theory. That whiteness is property. That's literally what they think. They think that you're walking around with like +2 charisma because you started as a white person.
Racial passives.
Yeah, exactly. Like as if you have like a little book, you open it up and it's like white. It means you get +1 all stats and +1 money. It's like it doesn't work that way. It doesn't. You have to be a good person. And it's the weirdest thing that they attribute it to white people, because imagine it this way. Let's say a baby is born in the middle of the woods and the mom dies and then wolves come and take the baby and the baby's raised by wolves. Is that baby going to have privilege? No, it's not. It's going to be living with wolves and eating refuse.
Look, that's the kind of argument that somebody who doesn't care about history or is intentionally not. All right, so I'm Greek, right? Mm-hmm. My great grandparents were having to deal with the Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. It's not a modern thing that a lot of people talk about, but they were basically on the run refugees. Some of my extended family back then might have even been like slaves, who knows. Mm-hmm. And then they were on the run for many years, and eventually they made their way to America, whatever. That had nothing to do with race. It was just a terrible thing that happened to a certain region of the world, that there were bad people doing things to people who were just trying to live their lives, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. But I use the example of this. Like, I'm first generation American. I was born here. I had opportunities that my parents didn't have, that my grandparents definitely didn't have. Like, my grandma was picking tobacco as a girl. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd tell me about, like, her hands were brown because she was picking up all this tobacco. Like, a girl. She didn't have a childhood. Mm-hmm. My grandpa, same thing. Didn't finish middle school. I got to finish high school. It's just a straight, like, it drives me nuts to think, like, I didn't realize this until I was an adult, but just to have been born here is such a lucky thing for me compared to the rest of my family. Just one generation ago, my dad, I don't want to talk too much about him out of respect, but like he was born in like terrible conditions. And just the fact that he made it to America at all is such a freak accident. Mm-hmm. And then for me to have been born here is even more of a freak accident. But then for me to go around and I can't blame. All right. Let's say my career didn't work out until recently, whatever. I can't blame anybody but myself for that. I didn't work hard enough. I didn't have the right opportunities, whatever. Maybe I had bad luck. But I was born in America, and that's already, not to disrespect anyone who wasn't, but like just to be born here in this time.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, so lucky.
Because you realize if we were doing this show, if we were trying to do this show maybe like 7 years ago, Seamus would be surrounding me with a bunch of with all his buddies pouring milkshakes on my head and like laughing.
No, it would be the opposite. Dude, the Irish would be getting made fun of and insulted.
We'd be being mocked.
No, I mean, it's true that like the Irish are extremely lower class. And I know that my grandfather on my mom's side was basically pulled out of school in fourth grade. So that was the highest education he ever got. And he just had to work for the rest of his childhood.
In America?
That's insane. Yeah, in America.
Okay.
In America. So things – and also, I won't get too into the details of my family history, but a lot of really horrible circumstances that just befell – my pretty recent ancestors, even in this nation. This is an incredible time to be alive. And also when I look at where my ancestors were just one or two generations ago and where I am now, it's really incredible that people could work their way up any kind of hierarchy that quickly over time. Because in many other countries, you just have a kind of caste system. And people look at the United States and they say, well, there is a hierarchy, and so that must mean you have kind of a caste system, the richer at the top, poor at the bottom. But what people don't recognize is that there is so much... there is so much moving in and out of income brackets in the United States that is entirely unprecedented historically and also in the world today. There's more economic mobility in the United States than any other country in the world. But you will never be told that. You're only told about income inequality. You're not told about the fact that people move through their income bracket extremely fluidly in the United States, and that just isn't the case to the same extent in other developed countries.
And even our low income brackets, like the fact that we have like air conditioning in our houses, that you could pay for an air conditioner or whatever, that you can go and buy groceries. Half the world can't buy groceries half the time. The fact that you can buy a crappy car, let's even say, like that just kind of runs, like puts you already ahead of so many people.
Yeah,
like,
we have fat homeless people.
I mean,
like, we got,
that's what drives
it's a problem.
That's the thing. Well, yes, but in homelessness also often, and I know a number of people are homeless, and it's horrible, but oftentimes homelessness is a product of mental illness or alcoholism. It's not as if we don't have enough resources for everybody. And
you also have that video. I tweeted this video out from a Twitter account on the Venice Boardwalk. It's three guys just laughing about how they love being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked at a homeless shelter, and one of the biggest problems is people don't we get this so often from the left when they're like, we could end the homelessness if we just stop spending money here. I'm like, bro, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. It's like children. And I mean this with respect. You know, children just lack knowledge. They're young. They haven't experienced things. They also lack wisdom. And it's not absolute. There are a lot of really smart and wise young people for sure. But they look at homeless people and they're like, we could just pay to end this. And I'm like, go down to Venice and ask the beach bums. And they're going to be like, I'm not going anywhere. They're like, I like living out here. Mm-hmm. Dude, I got to admit, like, Venice is rad. They got public showers that are beautiful and tons of people just sleep on the beach. You can't convince them to stop doing it because it's their passion. They love it. And it's true for other places too. They're rail jumpers. What do they call them? These people, they ride the rails. They ride cargo trains throughout the United States, and they have, you know, it's like that trope of the hobo with the stick.
Yeah, sounds
and he's got
fun.
The handkerchief wrapped in the back, and it's full of stuff. Cool. Not like that specifically, but I knew a ton of people when I lived in Seattle. They were rail jumpers. They would wait for a cargo freight train, and they would jump on the back and ride it for free across the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the train would stop, and the engineers would get out and start beating the crap out of them and chase them off. Mm-hmm. Typically, they would just ride for free across the U.S. Mm-hmm. They don't want to not be homeless. So the solutions to these problems are not particularly easy, and people have to realize a lot of it comes down to personal responsibility and personal choice.
Well, I also want to say this. I want to be really careful here, too, because there are a lot of homeless people, and I know homeless people who don't want to be homeless. They wish they had a house, and I see this in the city I live in. I also see this in the Chicago area. Tim, I'm sure you saw this. When you were working at a homeless shelter, was it in the Chicago area?
No, it was in LA.
Okay. So obviously, there different parts of the world have different problems with homelessness. But in Chicago, where it's freezing out, I mean, a lot of those people, they really wish they had a home, and they don't. But that's not necessarily a product of the fact that there weren't enough resources for everyone. I mean, we have multiple empty homes for every homeless person. It's also that a lot of these people are really seriously mentally ill,
right,
or have a very serious addiction problem. And just putting them in a house is not a solution to that problem. They have to be monitored. People need to be taking care of them, or they need to be in a mental health facility somewhere. So there's more that we have to be doing for these people, but it's often made out to be this problem we could solve by just throwing enough money at the right people or just placing them in these empty houses that are already there, and it's totally naive.
Once again, like I say, children. You know, people who have never owned a home or been responsible for a home. So, look, 2 days ago, this fire alarm went off. And so everybody has to get up. Fire department comes. We leave the house. So lightning struck the other day and our internet broke. So something happened. This was after the outage, but something happened that may have fried some electrical circuit. We don't know. There was a storm before this. And so when the smoke alarm went off, we were worried there may have been something internally, some wiring that tripped it. We couldn't, I swept the house, couldn't find anything. And we're like, what are we supposed to do? So we call them. They come, did a sweep. Turns out we're good. Hopefully we're good. Maybe it wasn't lightning that struck it. Maybe there was an electrical fire on one of these cables or something that we didn't realize, and that's what made the alarm go off. Maybe it wasn't lightning. I don't know. But I recognize that having to maintain this house and having to be responsible for people's safety. Now imagine you took a homeless person and just put them in this building and said, it's an empty house. There you go. Mm-hmm. The alarm goes off. Let's say this person's not mentally capable of taking care of the house, and then the house burns down.
Mm-hmm.
and they're in it. No one calls the 911. No one's there for them. You can't just put a person in a house. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
But let's talk about, you know, I guess the left and hypocrisy, because we got this this story here.
Uh-oh.
It's from the other day, actually, but it's been picking up. Okay Boomer TikTok influencer called Hypocrite after showing off $2 million flat. Everybody knows Nico Lull. She is an influencer. And if you don't know who she is, just take a look at George over here. He's got a picture that he drew.
What kind of freak would draw that?
Yeah, especially that top left one.
Something's wrong with that artist.
Yeah, who hurt him?
Biden emerging from the wall like some kind of gigantic Junji Ito demon.
So what's happening in this piece of art, George?
Well, she regrets being a part of the party that ended up devouring her. I mean, she was obviously supporting one guy, and then, oh no, it's the other guy. And you fed him. Turns out you fed him the whole time.
There are like other faces in his body.
Oh, yes. You see, there's the sequel, my book, Oh No, It's Uncle Joe, which is not
Oh No, It's Uncle
not based
Joe.
On anyone real. You no, see, no. Where the story is that, you know, there's...
Okay, okay, so anyway, this is she's a very popular influencer. She did this dance. You probably saw it where she's saying, okay, Boomer. Gets 50 million views. Now she's rich. The thing is, everybody's dragging her because she's got a Bernie shirt on. She's wearing a Tax the Rich shirt. And then she makes a video where she's like, my $2 million apartment. The first thing I'll just say is, when did you expect that? Why would you believe that any of these people actually knew or understood economics or politics? Right? Like all of these young DSA types. My assumption immediately is that they're children. You know, that's why they have that saying. It's like, if you're not conservative when you're older, you have no head. If you're not liberal when you're young, you have no heart or whatever.
Yep.
Well, I think it's obvious. Everybody's liberal until they look at their first paycheck, and then they realize where the taxes are going. I'll tell you a story.
I wasn't
man.
Liberal before then.
Dude, I worked for when I worked for American Airlines, I remember I was always waiting for the younger guys who got hired to look at their paycheck and then just be like, nah. I remember the first time I got a paycheck. I had jobs before this. Mm-hmm. I worked at some fast food restaurants. I worked at Portillo's. People, you guys know Portillo's in Chicago?
Dude, Portillo's is the best.
Yes, it's totally lit. And I worked there. And then I got a job at the airline. And I worked, you know, 80 hours in 2 weeks. And I was like, I had a general idea of taxes and what I was going to get. And I needed desperately the money. And I look at my check and I'm like, nah, this ain't right. And I was like, hey, there's something wrong with my check. And they're like, no, look, there it is. It's like all the breakdowns there. And I was like, why am I being taxed so much?
Yep.
Like that blew my mind. I'm like, bro, I'm poor. I can't afford that.
It's insane. And they talk about raising the minimum wage while they're taxing people who make minimum wage. It's like, how about you just take less of their money?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, they get it back at the end of the year for the most part if they're poor. But anyway, what ends up happening is you get a lot of people who go to college. They never had a job.
Yeah.
So while they're in college, they hear Bernie, socialism, communism, and all this other stuff. They've never had a job. Mm-hmm. Then when they get out, what happens? Some of them become famous. Start making hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. And now they're just like, okay, Boomer, you know, buy a $2 million flat or whatever. I don't know if she actually bought it, but they never actually understood any of the politics they were espousing. Because I tell you this, any one of these people, if they had to provide for a family, they'd be like, abolish taxes.
Yes.
Taxation is theft.
100%.
The moment they look, they're like, I just worked all year and what do I have to show for it? Well, 40% of your income. I think the total taxes with sales tax and everything, it's like 48% or something like that of your income goes to the government or higher probably.
And with sales tax, it also depends on how you look at it. So if you're self-employed or you run your own business, you have to pay more into Social Security. You pay in what your employer would normally pay in. And what people don't realize is like their employer, when they do pay into that, they're taking that out of that person's check. So you're paying more into taxes than you actually think you are.
So this is this OK Boomer thing, right? At first, I was actually going to do a segment where I was like, guys, I really don't care that she's rich. You can be a lefty and still believe in like class and wealth.
If you're
like
a sock dem, yeah, maybe.
Right. And so I'm like, there's nuance here. Maybe she's going to learn. But then I saw this video where she's like, she made a video called How Much Money Do I Make? And she said, I think when people are talking about the wealthy, they're talking like about billionaires. And I'm like, oh, here we go.
That's okay, hilarious. Bernie.
I'm not.
So here's the thing. I made this joke years ago. I did a cartoon about the 99.99% complaining about the 0.01%.
Oh, 0.01%.
And the whole bit was that in the United States, where the vast majority of people have a standard of life significantly higher than basically everyone else in the world, so if you make more than $30,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the world economy, mm-hmm. and people in the U.S. are constantly complaining, or I shouldn't say all people in the U.S., but many are constantly complaining about income inequality. And it's literally like, to some extent, millionaires complaining about billionaires. Not always. I understand when you get into things like healthcare, there are actually a lot of legitimate problems that need to be solved there. But I think it's funny that now we literally do have millionaires complaining about billionaires. Like, it's a joke I made years ago, and it's an actual thing which is happening.
I would, you know, you should make a video with Bernie being like, I am a humble millionaire upset with the billionaires. Look how much I have to work.
But
if you write a best-selling book, you can be a millionaire. No, but it's got to be like he's leading a rally of millionaires. It's a bunch of millionaires with pitchforks angry at the
thing, billionaires. Like, I made a cartoon like that years ago, and it was these rich guys complaining about how other people are more rich than them.
It is unfair.
And now it's
that
real.
I have to write an entire book to buy my fourth house.
There might be something to it because the founding fathers of the United States were basically millionaires of their time up against the billionaire of their time, the king, who was unfairly, you know, fiscally robbing them, taxing them. And so these big companies with these bailouts and are basically that. That's like the modern day monarchy. And maybe we need a class of millionaires to rise up and fix things.
There is a massive disparity between the wealthiest and the poorest in the world that's like we've never seen before. So what happens is in the US you end up with these like, what do we call them yesterday? Silver spoon socialists? Where, that's what someone super chatted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she's a silver spoon socialist where they're like, supporting Bernie Sanders and democratic socialism while they're millionaires complaining about billionaires. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I think it's all bad. I get it. People are allowed to be rich. I got no problem with people being rich. I'm saying my problem is with the ultra wealthy manipulating elections and using undue influence and everything. It's a challenge. I don't know how you solve it because it's not just about having money. Like the fact that that I have this show, that we're on this show is more valuable than money. People pay so that they can get a message out across through the show or something. So I don't know how you actually deal with problems like that, but I can tell you this. Someone who's got $50 million has massive power, and someone with $1 billion has a lot more, but they can still have massive influence over elections.
Yeah, you don't need money to be super popular and influential. You just need a little bit.
Just hold it up.
No.
Are you sure
no,
that's
don't
acceptable?
Do it. Don't do it.
Why not?
Don't do it.
Don't, okay, fine.
I gotta
gross.
Do it.
It's gross. Don't do it.
Can I do
don't
it?
Do no,
it.
Seamus said not to.
George please is explaining.
Seamus is mad.
I drew a butt. And it says,
you drew a butt.
Is it a butt? It says
money,
okay.
Please.
Well, so this is the funny thing about Nico.
I'll take your money.
That's right.
I'll draw butts all the time.
The funny thing about Nico Lowe is that people are commenting. People are dragging her, being like, you're a hypocrite and all that stuff. But her fans are like, I literally only follow her for her body. I don't care what she believes. Whatever, man. She's getting rich then. Fine. Whatever.
It's her hustle. Whatever. Everybody's got their own hustle.
I don't know what we were expecting from like the TikToker here at the same time. Maybe that's a little condescending. I mean, I'm a YouTuber, so maybe I shouldn't be dumping on TikTokers. But I like to think we're like a little bit above that. I like to think.
I'm not above it.
I think Dragon Bernie is perfectly appropriate.
Absolutely. I do it
all
the
time. He stopped saying millionaire. When he became a millionaire. No joke. Like, there was an article. It's like, you can track the moment he removed millionaire from his speeches, and it's around the same time he became a millionaire. That's the stupidest thing ever.
Welcome to the club of wanting money. Like, we were talking about this before we went on air. I don't see why every young people isn't saying, I want to be a millionaire. I want to do whatever is morally okay with me, whatever. I'm going to do what's got to be done to earn a living and maybe earn more than a living so I can, you know, take care of my family, whatever. Buy a nice car if you want to buy a nice car. There's no guilt factor. I don't understand why people have this guilt of like, it's okay to make money. And
yeah,
then
seriously.
Have the money and then, you know, you can spread it to other places, invest, give it to other people so they can do things with that money. Don't just sit on, you know, people have this idea of, all right, so there's the idea of if certain people who don't have a lot of money win the lottery, it actually is worse for them in the long run because they don't know how to spend the money or save it or reinvest it. But like, I feel like if you have this, if you work for your money, maybe you have a little bit more of a, you understand the value of that dollar or something. It's like, I have a couple of dollars in my pocket. I'm not going to just let it sit there. I want to make it do something. I want to
buy Bitcoin.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. You've got the whole point is you've got to try this idea of when you have a couple of bucks, you don't just sit on it. You don't just waste it. You want to try to do something with it. Give it to other people. Hire other people so that you can make more money and they can make more money. That's the point of – that's one of the good things about earning money. So I can understand how you might look at someone who has a lot and just assume they're just going to waste it all the time. But you can
everybody
be responsible.
Everybody thinks they should have your money. Everybody yeah. thinks they should be rich.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, you sound a little Keynesian for me on the point about savings, but I hear you. I think what it goes back to is what we discussed earlier with people thinking the only reason anyone has money is because they've done something evil to get it. And if you're at the top of that hierarchy, it must be because that's you participated in a rigged game. Yeah, of course.
Until they get some.
Yeah, until they get some. And then they're like, well, actually,
and then
you
end
can
up
become
with
a millionaire ethically, but billionaires. And then as soon as Jeff Bezos becomes a trillionaire, it's just going to be him that everyone's mad at.
But
all the
billionaires
are going to be like, no, being a billionaire is fine. It's the trillionaires who are really doing it to
us. We need a Bernie in 10 years, and he's like really old, and he's a billionaire now because he wrote like 1,000 new best-selling books and made $1 billion. And he's like, the multi-billionaires in this country are the problem, not the billionaires. And then it's like Jeff Bezos. He's like
billionaires.
He's looking at his phone and he's sweating, and it says like Jeff Bezos net worth, and it's at 999 billion. Yeah. And then it rolls over to 1 trillion. He goes, the trillionaires in this country. And that's
well,
it.
Here's the great thing about Joe Biden's administration and what our political leaders decided to do with printing all this money. We might all be millionaires soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look at that.
I can't wait.
You guys want to see something crazy?
Oh, that hyperinflation is.
Let me pull something up for you guys. All right, check this out. We got the. You ever see the U.S. debt clock?
Yes.
I can't even look at it.
It's a real time debt
clock.
Let's
check this out.
Tim, why are you doing this to me?
The USDebtClock.org says savings per family $36,875. The average savings per family. So that means grab a random family in the U.S. They got $36,000 in their bank account. That's a lot of money,
that
right?
That sounds wrong, but okay.
I don't know if that because
that used to be a lot of money.
So,
but hold on,
that's because don't they say like
because certain families
can't
have
$600 for an
it
emergency
says,
or unseen expense.
So it's the average, not the median.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Liquid cash in personal savings for all U.S. families divided by the number of U.S. families.
Okay, so there's a small group of them that are super rich, and
exactly.
then everybody else.
I don't think there's enough rich people to skew it that heavily, but it's probably like okay, so maybe the median for the like middle class probably like 20k or whatever. So but let me jump over. We have this button. Look at this button right here. It says debt clock time machine.
Oh no.
And I'm going to click this and I'm going to jump to 2025. Let me ask you.
Oh.
What do you think the average savings per family will be by 2025?
107. 170.
Based on the inflation we're seeing now.
107.
All right, answer 107. What do you think, George?
Sure, 108.
You price is right here.
What have I done?
Wait, can I go with 109?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Great,
you're all wrong.
Can we get the goal?
You are all wrong.
170.
$512,000. U.S. debt clock.
Worthless.
By taking the current tracking and the current numbers, jumping 4 years from now says that if you take the total number of liquid cash and all savings and divide it by the number of families, the average is $500,000.
That's pretty bad. So, and here's the thing. Oh,
wait, but
man.
That's a big number, right?
That means
we're all millionaires.
So think about this.
Right.
Wait. That means if one Bitcoin right now costs $36,000, one Bitcoin in 2025 will be worth $500,000.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's a lot of.
Oh man! And here's
that's
the
a
thing.
Lot of.
I'm gonna buy Bitcoin.
Well, here's
a lot of ceilings to buy for your grandma. I'll
here's what's excuse me. Here's what's really scary about this. So this is the projected numbers by 2025. But I mean, look, back in 2016, no one would have predicted that by 2021 we'd be $28 trillion in debt. So it could be far worse by 2025. Inflation
in 2016, the national debt was $19 trillion.
19, yeah, it was just under 20.
Yeah, now we're 27.
And yeah.
Now we're 28.
28,
something.
Dude.
So
by 2025, the national debt is projected to be $50 trillion.
Which is good.
That's fine.
Everything's okay.
Well, you can see how it manifests. $512,000 savings per family. What people need to understand that means, right now, what's happening? Somebody's like, I got $36K in the bank. Why do I need to work? I'm good. So then, in order to get people to work, McDonald's is offering a $1,000 sign-on bonus. In order to pay for that sign-on bonus and those increased wages, they charge more for burgers. It just makes everything cost more.
Yeah, exactly.
So right now, there's the Bitcoin conference going on. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah. I think Max
Spies
is down there.
Someone, yeah. He walks in. Everyone's like standing ovation. And you know, he's yelling and he's like, F Elon or something like that. It was hilarious. And there's a big dumpster outside of it that says cash is trash. And it's full of Venezuelan, you know, bolivars.
Yes.
Fuerte or whatever.
So people were actually making paper art out of their Venezuelan marks and selling it online. So they would make like bags and wallets and sell those on the internet to get a higher return on their money than they would have just converting it to dollars.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So when you Google it, it's what pops up is our good friend Luke Rydkowski.
Oh.
He says there's free Venezuelan bolivars in a dumpster at the Bitcoin conference. That's nuts,
except
man.
They require energy to acquire, so nothing's free.
I think, you know, I would take a bunch of those.
You as well.
Yeah.
Oh, anything, I'll be like a bro, history. I mean, we're fighting over toilet paper right now. Like, come on, they're giving it away for free.
Would cost a lot.
I think it's made of plastic, though.
Oh, I thought it was.
But either way, it's like boxes and boxes of bolivars just in a dumpster. You know what the craziest thing is? Because, like, I've been to Venezuela. We had a big black garbage bag full of the money. And I was like, what's the point, dude? Yeah. Just bring a $10 bill from America to buy your pizza. Otherwise, I'm not going to hand some guy a garbage bag to throw in his trunk. And eventually, you're just like, dude, I didn't even want to carry. It's not even worth it to carry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fiat. Well, they keep printing all this money. Joe Biden is $22 trillion in borrowing, $6 trillion in spending. So what do you think is going to happen to the economy?
Well, what does that mean? Where's he borrowing that from? And what's he – so he's issuing another $22 trillion borrow from the Federal Reserve? Is that what this is?
I mean, the borrowing probably is bonds and loans, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Debts. So it could be like, you know, they pledge to pay something and then track an invoice.
But they're going to knock our debt from $28 trillion to $50 trillion with this $22
trillion? By the time Joe Biden leaves office after his first term, because, you know, he will, and Donald Trump has already issued an email where he said, the next time I'm in office,
uh-oh,
we are going to be nearly double the national debt. $50 trillion. That's amazing. I remember when they were like, the debt ceiling and the national debt is too high, and now it's just like, deficit spend until nothing is worth nothing and everybody just, you know, lives off of saltine crackers.
Basically, gross. Yeah. $50 trillion. That's going to be fantastic.
Well, it just means, look, I think the economy will keep on churning, but your savings is gone. Mm-hmm. So if you have U.S. dollars right now, this is why people are buying, you know, houses like crazy. But I'll tell you what, man. So I got a message today from the Jessica, who does our graphic design stuff. She had a photo. I think it was Starbucks, and they were like, we're out of peaches, we're out of strawberries, we're out of fruit, we're out of coffee, we're out of this, we're out of that. And it was like a sign. They're like, we don't got nothing. Mm-hmm. So they keep saying supply hasn't caught up yet. And I'm like, then why are the shortages getting worse?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe Joe Biden keeps paying people not to work and printing money like crazy. And, I don't know.
I'm looking for a silver lining here.
I don't know.
Buy silver.
Buy silver.
Well, that's financial advice.
I would never give financial Everyone's advice. Just Seamus. Kidding. Friendly don't buy suggestion. Silver. Don't buy silver. That's not what I said.
That's
I
financial advice, too.
I think if I ask you for financial advice, can you give it to me as a friend?
He ran away.
Even
he
if you're not away. A finance Literally officer. Seamus. Seamus.
Seamus, come back.
In my time of need.
Seamus is just chugging all of his water. He's like a gallon of water.
He's hot tonight.
Look, you guys. I wasn't intending to give financial advice. I didn't.
Well, that's a silver lining. I was looking
for lunch all right now.
Right now, the average savings for family, $36K. Mm. Price of Bitcoin, $36K. Coincidence? Maybe. But if inflation is going to track savings, Bitcoin's going to be at $500,000 by 2025. I think it'll be higher,
actually.
I mean, it's not just
not financial advice.
Well, no, because listen. Bitcoin tracking just for inflation, $500,000. But add on the fact that it's going to be more widespread.
Yeah.
So at this Bitcoin conference, it was crazy. Someone posted a video where the line was like blocks and blocks long to get in.
Wow.
Bitcoin is legit here, man. Yeah. Elon Musk can cry all day and night about it and post his little silly memes. And nobody cares. People were like posting they were going to sell off Tesla stock. They don't want to be involved because Tesla is playing dirty games or whatever.
Yeah.
Or because Elon is. But I think if it's tracking just for inflation, $500,000 for a Bitcoin, you add in the fact that we got 4 years of Bitcoin growth and you got development, $1 million, $2 million per Bitcoin. And then people are going to wish they had some.
That's not financial advice.
No, I don't buy Bitcoin. Don't.
No, that's financial advice, Tim.
Don't do anything. Just don't listen to me.
Is it financial advice
don't
to
listen
tell people
to
invest in Freedom Tunes t-shirts? If I ask someone to buy something,
I think
this is not financial advice, but if you want a Freedom Tunes t-shirt, just go to freedomtunesmerch.com. Yeah. There's a t-shirt.
Invest your...
I think you're allowed to suggest them to buy them, but not to invest
in
them.
It's not an investment, all right? Now, here's the thing. The money you have might be worth less in the future, good and you could have got a t-shirt out of it, but you won't be able to. It'll be too late. So freedomtunes.com or freedomtunes.merch. I'm sorry, freedomtunes.merch.com.
I can't even get a domain name right.
Bro, this
freedomtunesmerch.com.
This Bitcoin conference was lit.
Oh, because,
like, not only do they have the Venezuelan dollars in the dumpster, not only was it jam-packed with people who are super enthusiastic about this decentralized currency, but Laura Loomer confronted Jack Dorsey. And I'm all here for it.
He was there? Jack Dorsey was at
Jack
the Bitcoin
Dorsey was
conference?
Speaking, and she
really?
And she
guys,
got
Bitcoin
up.
Is good.
she got up and she's like, "You are manipulating elections." And then I guess she got, you know, security throughout or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, that's excellent.
So you've both taken him to school.
Oh, I mean, Laura's gone after everybody. She chained her she handcuffed herself to the Twitter building in New York. Didn't
really?
She? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so that's, you know, I just yelled at the guy, I guess. Yeah. Like, I argued with him.
He had his bodyguard. That
was when Tim and I met. I asked him to do a voice in the cartoon I made about you yelling at Jack Dorsey.
Yeah.
That guy, I was unaware of everything that was being done.
Oh, yeah. We have to
discriminate against conservatives if we want people to be free on our platform. That's the only way.
And then who did the voice of Vijaya Gadde?
I think it was me. Yeah. No. I didn't, like, I couldn't do an impression of her, so I just did, like, a generic bad female voice.
It's like, well, actually, that we have to, the reason the website did this.
But I was more, I mean, the Jack. The
Twitter
Jack
exists to just make sure all conservatives can rot in hell. I just, the only way people are free to speak is if conservatives can't talk. It's just the only possible solution.
Yeah. No, I think they genuinely believe that a run-of-the-mill conservative is like, you know, when they imagine a regular conservative, it's like a liberal, like Ezra Klein. That's how they see conservatives.
Yes. Well, I'm gonna take a line from Michael Knowles here, but as he says, or to put it in his words, the only thing conservatives have been able to agree on since the Cold War is to cut taxes. And so I think to many people on the left, like, that's just what conservatism is. Like, conservatism is when you talk about tax cuts, but everything else is just, that's weird alt-right something.
What is right-wing anymore?
Nazis were right-wing.
I heard Ian was right-wing, and I was like, that's not correct.
I know.
Wait, what
is this topsy-turvy world now?
Ian's
I don't understand. I hang out with Tim,
Literally a long-haired freaky people. You know,
dude, I try to be center,
Ian's
but I mean, I am drawn to the left. I'm drawn to the wicked, wacky, wild, you know, psychoactive experience of reality.
That's not right-wing at all. That's like that's one of the least right-wing things I've ever heard in my life.
That's what I'm talking
about. Timcast IRL is a far-right podcast hosted by a liberal and some weird hippie guy.
As soon as I'm off air, Ian's like telling me I need to like read Aquinas. And
yes. People don't realize it. It's a wig.
But that's actually crazy, too.
Ian's got a very short haircut.
It's funny that that's also considered right-wing now. Like, it's just strange how all like the foundational philosophy of our culture is scary. And dangerous.
I would suppose Jesus was probably left wing. Would have been considered left wing for his time. Like he was a radical, anti-establishment. You know, he spoke out against the empire.
So,
real quick. Yeah. Speaking out against the empire. What do you think ANCAPs are? No. They're not left wing.
Yeah.
Like the Bitcoin conference is loaded with libertarians.
By the left and the right thing. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, and this is why we have to be very careful.
Real quick. Sorry. Just literally means evil. That's all you need to know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, basically. Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
It's true.
But no, I mean, kind of, because here's the thing. We view everything as left versus right when it comes to our social structures right now. But these were not terms that were used prior to the French Revolution. And so you kind of have to stop trying to put different moments in history into those boxes. I know that the left literally exists and existed from the very beginning to counter the Catholic Church and its goals. If you look at the French Revolution,
this was
what they did.
Yeah.
If you look at the French Revolution and the foundational thinkers of it, and the foundational thinkers of leftism, their entire purpose has always been to counter Christian values and more specifically the Catholic Church and its goals.
I was wrong. It doesn't mean evil.
Okay.
I looked it up. We have etymology. Left means opposite of right, from Old English "lift," which means weak and foolish.
Oh my gosh!
I'm not kidding. Left-handed. It also the Dutch dialect "loof," meaning weak and worthless.
Wow.
And sinister.
And also, if someone goes away, they left.
Yeah, there you go.
Odd.
It's all bad.
Word has such a negative.
They say the usual Old English "winstray," "winestra," left, left hand, literally friendlier. A euphemism used superstitiously to avoid invoking the unlucky forces connected with the left side. Compare sinister. And there you go.
I would suggest we don't put ourselves in the same position that the French revolutionaries found themselves in. dividing people into a left and a right.
Dude, sinister literally means to the left.
Yes, it does.
What? It means contrary, false, unfavorable, to the left.
And the word sin
well,
is
I could have told you, yeah.
And the right literally means right.
Correct.
Correct.
You are right.
That's busted.
So saying someone is far right, you're saying like, you are very correct.
You're very correct.
You're very correct.
Sir, I agree with you very much.
No, I disagree with you because you're right and I'm wrong.
Correct.
That's all you got to say from now on. People are like, you know, you're far right. Be like, thank you. I am correct. I am very right in all of my opinions. Like, they are correct. They are right. Mm-hmm. You're wrong.
There's so many like common words like right, left, wrong, right, light, heavy, dark, light. Like this word, the word light and the word right have so many. They're such simple, proliferative words in our language, but have vastly different meanings.
Yep.
Depending on how you're using it. I don't like it. It's not enough words. We need different words for those.
Just make stuff up.
Yeah, looking up the origin of light and it's not related.
Light, dark, or yeah. It also means light, not heavy.
Not dark. I don't know.
Not dark.
From, it comes from loot, light, brightness. This is the word light. Huh. That's it. Nothing special.
Light means right.
There you go.
Light makes right.
Well,
no, I don't like that direction you're going in, Ian.
All right, thanks. Pull me back from the edge.
Dude,
baby.
I saw him buying a pack of Skittles earlier.
I think humans really prefer light because we're so visually oriented. I think that's
definitely.
All.
Well, it was because darkness was like nighttime was scary.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah.
You know, there's like bears and stuff. You're like sleeping and you're like, you know, mind your own business and like a bear comes out and he like bites you.
We really are in, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, like the Americans being born here is such a, like a just valuable in and of itself. And I was thinking, just talking earlier today about how it's kind of like being in the king's court. Like as Americans, if the earth was a kingdom, we were the ones that were born in our living court drama right now. This is all that's going on inside the castle. It's really,
well, let's be great. Real. Like, you know, Ian, when we were choosing our characters for the simulation, like we all chose easy mode.
Basically.
We were like, let's put on casual, you know, American, and Ian chose white male. Yeah. Just absolutely determines everything.
I want the best ending. I'm just going to beat it, help as many people as I can.
Beat it.
And maybe I'll try it on hard mode next time.
Yeah, and hard mode would be what, being born in like Somalia?
And today it would be, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can be born in like the middle of Australia, I guess, to like a witch doctor family of like weird European settlers who found themselves in the middle of the outback, and you're fighting scorpions and kangaroos at the same time, and kangaroos that throw scorpions at you.
Oh, yeah. They carry them in their pouches.
The worst kind. Yeah.
And then once you get close enough to the cities, the kangaroos are now like pink. They're like the same animations, but they're 10 times stronger.
Yeah.
Because the simulation didn't feel like making new monsters.
Yeah.
So that's just the reality of it.
Elite kangaroos.
Uh-huh.
They're purple. Have you guys seen that video where the kangaroo is at the guy's window, like banging, trying to get
out? Dude, yes. That's terrifying.
It's all ripped.
This is why Australians need guns.
There you go.
Don't know why they got rid of them. Can you imagine a kangaroo just banging on your door? I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have my weapons.
Aren't like...
Look, I'm not going to get into a fist fight with a kangaroo.
Nope.
Have you ever been
friends with kangaroos? I thought like in Australia, like kangaroos are like people, you know?
I don't think
so. I watched a video where there was
Australia went to war with emus, didn't they? And lost. Oh, really?
What
did they
do?
And lost.
No one can beat the emu. What happened?
I need to double check this.
I saw a video where like people had a barbecue and a kangaroo just like jumps in and everyone's like, hey, mate. And the kangaroo's like doing his thing or something.
That's awesome.
It's like bouncing around.
So they're not that nice to animals. Australia did go to war with emus and they did lose. They did lose the war.
Wow.
They were just a pest all across Australia. Fun fact, you learn something new every day.
What is an emu?
I'm pretty anti-war, but I might be able to get behind the emu war. Unfortunately, they did lose, though.
It was funny when Sydney Watson was here and she told Ian about drop bears.
Yeah.
And it was all like, whoa.
But they were fake.
Yes. There's no drop bears.
She took me for a ride.
What did she? What was she saying drop bears were?
So, like, it's a joke that Australians have to trick non-Australians where they claim that koala bears will, like, drop from the trees and land on you and, like, maul you or something. Drop bears.
I'm not in a position to deny or
I
confirm.
Believe it, right?
Yeah. Don't they have, like, big onion rings?
I'm not
going
to, like, question the lived experience of someone who's come to my country from a foreign
land. Or is, like,
here for good.
Do Australians get mad at Outback Steakhouse and Foster's beer?
That's a good question.
Is it, like, cultural appropriation?
Foster's, yes, I think.
Foster's like isn't Foster's. In Australia, though, I think.
Right.
Yeah, not there.
It's Australian for beer, but it's not Australian.
It's like the Irish people get angry at Guinness.
Which is too bad, because that's a great beer.
Yeah, here's a secret. Y'all have never had a real Guinness.
don't
unless you've actually
yeah the
been.
Guinness that's in Ireland is different. Yep. When they ship it over, it actually messes with the consistency.
Well, I had one in Dublin at an airport.
Yeah,
they do the there you go. That's the real one. They do
yeah,
the
I
legit
had it in Scotland.
The legit, you know, Guinness gives out only to the people in Ireland.
The history of Guinness is pretty interesting. The Irish dock workers didn't have any money. They were making beer, and then they'd sell all the beer would be gone, and at the bottom of the barrel there'd be this dark sludge, and they didn't have any money, so they just started making beer out of the sludge.
Sounds like Guinness.
Of course we'll drink it. It's alcohol.
That's
and
right.
It's like at the bottom. They're like, yeah, of course we'll try it.
It became one of the most delicious. You know, beer, in my opinion, on the planet. Probably
I love that our that's contribution was the bottom of the barrel.
That's a racist, racist stereotype.
You're right, I'm sorry,
British
really
people actually drink more per capita than Irish people do.
Is that true?
Yeah, I was reading about
good.
It.
It's the guilt.
And the Irish drunk emerged because, this is what I heard, it could be false, that when Irish immigrants were coming to the United States, like in the early 1900s and like late 1800s, they would pretend to be drunk if they were homeless so they could get a free night's sleep in the local jail.
Oh,
yeah. I know that they're called paddy wagons because Irish people were disproportionately arrested, but I don't know about that. They're like, oh, I was pretending. Of course, I was just pretending so I could go off to jail for the night. I had wanted somewhere worse to sleep.
People
it's
do it
just
now,
an
though.
Act. I'm totally just pretending because I've had too much alcohol in my system right now.
People do it now, though. People like homeless people will commit a low level crime to get a free place to stay.
That's so sad.
Yeah,
it's so sad.
You occasionally get people that claim that they're. I can't make this joke. I was going to say
don't.
That they complain that they can't breathe in order to get taken to the hospital instead of the jail.
Come on.
Brutal.
He did that.
It's not really. It's not a joke. That's the worst part.
It's true, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People feign medical illness when they're being arrested.
Absolutely.
So they get taken
often.
To the
hospital.
Often.
That was testimony in the Chauvin trial. They do
yeah.
it a lot.
Oh.
All right.
Oh.
So then that makes it just harder to deal with everything. And then you get young people who don't understand how the world works, and they're like, burn it down! And then they literally go and burn it down, and then they forgot the name of the guy they're fighting for.
They were fighting for a guy named Sony as they walk out with a 50-inch flat screen under their arm.
Yeah. There was looting and fires the other day in Minneapolis in the no-go zone and around it.
After they put it back up?
Yeah, it was after they shot a guy. The marshals killed a fugitive. And so they were like, let's go riot. And then Unicorn Riot, this lefty group, like interviewed a guy. And he's like, I'll be honest, I don't even know the guy's name. I can't remember. And they're like, his name was like Winston, I think, or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. But then he was like, I don't even know his name. And like, you're torching stuff in the street. Like, don't you think it's kind of important, you know? The joke I made was like, could you imagine if you showed up for like a business meeting and you're like, I'm on the 50th floor for a business meeting. And who are you meeting? I don't know. No idea.
It'd
be like,
money.
Sir, you can't come in. Like, yeah. you're not here for any particular reason. That's the nature of activism these days, though, guys. Yeah. I guess one of you can just draw a picture about it and then we'll carry on as if nothing happened.
Act first, figure it out later.
That's what I always say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we could do. We can take super chats.
Oh,
I like from I the audience. And if you haven't already, smash the like Reverted. Button. I'm very excited. You know, we had some internet hiccups early on, but so far the squirrels have not chewed through the line that's just like on the ground, leading outside. So I'm like, I'm waiting for a car to run over it. I don't know. I guess the guy made it work. So you know, good on him.
We want to run some tape, electrical tape over it because it's going over the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Actually,
I think that's the core.
Doesn't it go all the way down to the street or something?
I didn't check. Huh. It looked like it might, though.
Yeah. And then, like, just cars are driving over it right now. The internet is going to get run over by a car. Anyway, smash the like button if you haven't already done so. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Christina H. says, did y'all see Tom McDonald's new music video today? It was fire. Blair White is in it. Happy Friday. I saw clips. I saw it on Instagram. It's cool. All right. Rob Lowe says, regarding your members show last night, I will say the whole having a kid kills your dreams argument is not true as a father. The moment I laid eyes on my daughter, all of my mistakes meant nothing and all I saw was the future. There you go.
That's beautiful.
Ethan Randall says, happy Killdozer Day.
That's
oh, is
right.
that is it the anniversary
today.
Of...
Today.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
All right, let's see. Political Bothead says, did you see Blair White was in Tom McDonald's new music video, Snowflakes? We need to support non-woke artists like Tom, G Prime, and Freedom Tunes.
Thank you.
That's correct.
This is actually something you mentioned earlier about like going off to art school, and I sort of joked about how parents generally don't like that or don't like their kid pursuing a career in art. I just want to say this. If you're a conservative person and you like are upset about the fact that conservatives are not represented in artistic careers, you got to become comfortable with your kid going into one.
Yes.
And conservative artists should also feel emboldened, even though I don't like that word. Like, you see Seamus there, you see, to a smaller extent, myself. There aren't a lot of conservative artists for some reason. It's like we're scared of getting canceled or something. If we don't step up and... I mean, there's this stereotype, a cliche of, like, a lot of artists and cartoonists and even humorists are left-leaning. But, like, where are all the right-leaning or even middle-slash-conservative creators? Like, feel free to step forward.
It's because there needs to be a sufficient tribe for money to exist. And what happens on the left is there's a massive market for leftism, and so it's basically a Mexican standoff. They may not believe these things, but they're like, I'm not going to cross this group that pays me. I'll get too much flack. It's not worth it. The same thing exists on the right.
Yeah.
Tribalism is tribalism.
100%.
I mean, somehow we've got to be able to find the time to do this X hours per week. Mm-hmm. Let's say if this is a full-time job, at least 40 hours a week. For me, it's like 60.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm trying my best. That. And a lot of us are trying our best. We just got to try to find the money to do this. I don't know, like... all right, so a lot of left-leaning creators, like they have The Daily Show and stuff like that. They have actual late-night shows where they have, you know, backing commercials and all that stuff. People paying them to do their SNL, right? Like, what happened to comedy? I don't know. But they're not funny anymore. They haven't been funny for 20 years. But, like, all right, so those people are getting paid to do their thing. And conservative creators, I think if more of us step up and if you have the guts to step up, don't be afraid of being canceled, because if you're working for yourself, kind of you can't be canceled. I feel like there's just got to be more of us and more high quality stuff. I'm not saying
you can still be canceled, but to a lesser degree, right? Like if you work for a company and you cross the left, they'll fire you from your job.
Yeah.
If you work for the right and you say something out of turn, they'll probably just like argue with you, and it might be bad for you in the long run. But you know, you can get canceled on the right.
Yeah,
it
happens. You can have clients refuse to work with you in the future if you're self-employed. You could also just be completely deplatformed.
That's true. I mean, that happens.
But
I
agree completely with your message. Completely.
Somehow we've got to find a way to make a living at this.
Yeah.
Fine. But there are a lot of us who want to do this for a living. We just somehow there's got to be a connection between finding an audience and then just giving them something that they're willing to throw you a tip or something.
Yeah, I hear you.
Here's some money for a t-shirt.
Right.
Here's a super chat.
Speaking of which, super chats.
Sean Easton says, he got three questions, so we'll go with the first one. Do you guys think that anime and Eastern cartoons have become popular due to the decline in quality in Western shows?
Yes.
Mm. Well, I'll answer this first. I grew up watching anime because American shows are like episodic. And anime is like, you know, what is it called? Like a serial? Like it's continuous. Mm-hmm. And so watching like Dragon Ball Z growing up, what happens next? Mm-hmm. And they always leave on the cliffhanger, you know, like Goku's about to go Super Saiyan. And you're like, I gotta see the next episode. Oh man. And you have this really long story where someone asks you like, what's happening in this episode? Oh dude, you gotta watch 100 episodes to figure out what's happening here. And then American shows, it was like at the end of every show, it just restarts.
Yes.
It's just like nothing changes. And it was just gag humor. And I wasn't a big fan of it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Do you want to go first?
No, you go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of history. I've been studying the history of comics for a long time because I, before I did silly political strips, I was trying to get into indie comics again. And if you study sort of what happened to American comics in the past few decades, there was a massive bubble in 92, 93. So Image Comics around 92... when Spawn was coming out and it was getting formed, was like the peak of American comics since, I want to say, the 50s, 40s, something like that. The Golden Age and the Silver Age was happening. So then the bubble burst for various reasons. And then there was a lot of stores closing in the mid to late 90s because of the speculator market. Mm-hmm. So long story short is a lot of creators ended up scattering and doing what they're doing now, which is crowdfunding a lot of their comic strips. So you get a lot of the creators who want to, I don't know, I create an Indiegogo or something like that, and I say, hey, everyone who follows me, if you want to buy this book, you can back the book. But what happens in Japan, there was a famous story a couple of weeks ago or a couple of days ago where one manga series called Demon Slayer, I think, is outselling the entire American comics industry.
Whoa!
Just one.
Well, hold on.
Manga.
That was the second question. As animators, what do you think of the Demon Slayer movie?
Okay.
I never saw it, yeah.
But the story is interesting because... All right,
real quick, Demon Slayer in America is outselling entire American comics?
I'm not sure in America, but maybe worldwide. Like, if you go to Barnes & Noble right now, right? If you look at the comics section, the graphic novel section, the Western comics, versus the manga section is almost always three times the size. For various reasons, but... people here even want to read more manga, like young people want to read manga more than American comics. They're more into it for numerous reasons. I've always said like manga is like the MMA versus, if you've ever seen those videos of the MMA fighter versus like the Tai Chi fighter, and it's just like a brutal beatdown of like American comics look really great, but if you pit American comics versus manga, manga's going to win every time.
Why is that?
I could do a whole thesis.
Look, I'll tell you this. When I see these like ultra woke trash comics,
no
one wants to go anywhere near that.
Well, that's why did that happen? It seems like that happened to comics in a way that it just hasn't happened to other industries in an overt way. So most creative industries lean to the left, but it just seems like comics are really far to the left compared to the other ones, and in a much more overt way.
They
movies and television shows will have a left wing message, but they're not like making a big deal of the fact that they are having a left wing message. Not as often. Yeah, but. But why comics,
Disney,
though? Why don't the same rules apply to these other industries?
Probably because Disney bought Marvel.
Hold on. My assumption is that comic sales were slumping. And these companies thought, we're only getting white men. We have this whole untapped audience of diversity, of like, you know, non-white, female, etc.
Did they, though?
So how could... Yes, that's what a lot of them do. They think their core audience is this one group, and how do we expand into all these other areas? So what they start doing is making diverse messages because they think that's what people want, instead of realizing nobody wants that. And maybe you should just make so I'll put it this way. It used to be that if you were a TV host, you were super rich. Now there's millions of hosts who do YouTube shows who are all doing well, who are well off, but not like $50 million like, you know, Hannity is. It's changing. So these comics start seeing their sales decline. And instead of saying, let's make another brand new comic for this market, they say, let's make Iron Man a young black woman. Because then the Iron Man fans will watch and read, and the other communities who don't now will. And it's like, now you've just made a weird character that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. I look at manga. It's not in there. Like, I got Crunchyroll, man, and I'm like, each and every one of these action shows I just watch, I'm like, wow, it's actually pretty good.
Well, yeah, I've never watched any anime, but I'm curious. I mean, it could also just be that the stories are more interesting to people.
Yeah, what's your thesis, George, at least?
Man, I don't know if you guys know, but, like, there was a company called Tokyopop back in the mid-2000s that was translating a lot of manga. Back before the recession of 2007-08, there was... Long story short, they were trying to do original English manga, and I was involved with that stuff. I had my first book was published through them.
Oh.
But what was happening with manga in those years and even in the late 90s was a lot of manga was getting published in English. That's why they started doing the whole, the format's going from right to left, because in the original Japanese, they read from right to left. So a lot of it seemed foreign and weird at first, but they weren't flipping the books anymore. You had companies like Viz, Tokyopop. Anyway, there were a lot of companies doing this. But you want to talk about diversity, for example. Like, there were so many female creators in Japan creating, like, say, shoujo series. That's a girl series. You know, I've got a couple of Rumiko Takahashi, Masami Suda, Fuyumi Soryo.
Yeah, Rumiko did Inuyasha.
Dude, she did so many. And if you want to talk about like female creators, and
those are huge mangas.
Massive. She's one of the richest manga creators in history, woman. And there was no inkling of like, oh, she was oppressed or she wasn't. She just made good books. And she found an audience that wanted to buy and read her stuff. They were crazy about it. Even here in the States. That's why if I go to Barnes & Noble, I try to like talk to some people like, hey, why do you read this series? And they just tell me, oh, I just like the story. I want to find out what's happening next. Even though it's not in color. Americans love books in color. But if you give them like Berserk, the creator of Berserk, Kentaro Miura, recently died. Everybody now was talking about, all of last week, were talking about how much they love Berserk. It's a black and white series, one of the coolest, darkest fantasy series you've ever heard of. They love that series.
Is that by Rumiko?
Berserk?
Yeah.
No, that's Kentaro Miura. Yeah, he did.
I was going to say, though, for Inuyasha, what year was that, 90s?
80s, I want to say. The 80s. Manga, at least. The anime would have been 90s, probably.
So Inuyasha is about a furry, and Ranma is about a transgender martial artist.
Really?
But
there's a reason I don't watch anime.
But people were reading those series.
I'm grossly mischaracterizing the animes.
I was also
no, but in a way, I mean, really, that gives you an idea of the people just wanted to read a story that they wanted to enjoy. There was no pushing of an ideology.
Yeah.
For them, especially in manga, story is the king. You've got the writer. All right, so you've got the mangaka who is the writer artist, who has assistants working with them, and then you've got the editor who helps them write the stories. But they're really focused on how do I get the readers to read the next chapter? Always, they're planning the story in such a way, like, I just started getting onto One Piece, and I can't get enough of it. It's so fun, and I want to find out what's happening next, and I just like the characters, I like the world, it's fun to read. An American comic nowadays, like, I open it, and I have to push myself, I have to force myself to turn the page. It's so boring, and I can't explain why, but when I read a manga, I can't put them down.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it's a martial arts thing to me, like, I grew up reading manga my whole life.
I grew up hanging out at comic shops, yeah, and they've just always been boring to me.
Have you? But if you saw a manga on the shelf, like, did you
put
feel?
It down.
Yeah,
dude. Like, Full Metal Alchemist.
You got to know what happens next.
The politics of it was brilliant.
Yeah,
I loved the 92-91 is when I got into comics. I was reading like the Infinity Gauntlet. X-Force was all right. X-Men, they were good stories. I mean, the relationship between Jean Grey and like Jubilee, or like Cyclops and like, you know, Colossus or whatever. And then, and Spawn came out, and it was like, oh, this is amazing. This is Jim Lee's started a new company with Image. And then maybe they just fell into the spectacle. I mean, Marvel got bought. That industry got torched by Disney, basically, it looks like.
Marvel was struggling for a long time. If you look at the history of what happened with Image, Tom McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, and all those guys, they were the top guys at Marvel. And they all decided to quit at the same time and form Image Comics. There was this whole flip of, like, the whole industry turned upside down. And everyone was like, oh, all right. So a few years later, there was something called the speculator market, which a lot of comic books were selling, like a Superman number one sold for a ton of money. And everyone's like, oh, I got to buy issue one of this book. And there's all these variant covers. It's super rare, so I have to invest in this comic. So what ended up happening, unfortunately, was Image Comics was so successful that they were selling millions and millions of copies of their first issues. Everyone was buying them, and it created a bubble by accident. Hmm. And then the bubble popped. So all these comic shops, like novelty comic shops that used to be card shops, opened and then closed, and everyone saw the recession is like, oh, comics are over. But it was just a bubble. So Image Comics is an interesting anomaly. And then, all right, so they were struggling for a while, and then Image Comics did a... All right, they had Walking Dead, which was really, really successful. Robert Kirkman ended up becoming a partner at Image after Walking Dead was doing really good, which is another black and white book, incidentally. And everybody wanted to... It was one of those page-turner books that everyone wants to find out what happens next.
Just go back to the 80s, man, and it was just a lot of really great stuff.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what happened. Like, the late internet, 90s, 2000s, eBay, it started to get dry.
eBay destroyed the market. What
I mean is the writing. So we're talking about, like, manga and anime versus comics, right? So I'm growing up, and I'm reading comics in, like, 2000, and they're getting dry and boring, and I'm reading, and I'm just like, ugh. You know what it might be? I can only read about Cyclops so many times.
Yeah.
Sure.
But, you know, I started watching Dragon Ball Z. I watched that in the 90s when I was a little kid. I would turn on Channel 50 at 8 in the morning. It was like, or I think the only way to watch it was in Spanish. And so there was, like, that scene where
that's why you speak Spanish now.
Vegeta's about to kill Nappa. And Nappa goes, "Por qué, Vegeta?" And then Vegeta blasts him. And I'm like, "Por qué?" And then, I'm a little kid. And then I started watching, and I'm like, whoa. And, like, the lore was really cool because I'd watch an episode, and then someone would start telling me, like, here's this character. Here's what happened 10 years ago. And I'm like, whoa. And I'm getting really, really into it. I open a comic. Yeah, like, a lot of the X-Men lore and, like, the DC lore stuff was interesting. But it started to get boring. Mm-hmm. And then the difference is, there's so much different manga that are long, that are in depth, that have different characters, that I could just find the one that I thought was really good and stick to it and watch it or read it and get through the whole thing. Mm. I don't know, man. You compare, like, the Full Metal Alchemist, the politics of that manga, brilliant. Like, government corruption and just the general aspect of how they have the powers they have, alchemy. They can just make things with code, like they write on the tables or whatever. And then you have Death Note, which is probably one of the greatest.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Just brilliant.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what can we say right now? MCU. Cool, I like the MCU movies, but it's regurgitated.
They're not hiring or searching for new talent. Like, the way that manga, Shonen Jump and all those companies over there, they have talent searches all the time. Submit your stuff. Submit a chapter. The editors will pick the best. You get to talk to an editor. Maybe you get to develop a series. Over here in the States, All right, so you got even veteran creators. I was talking to a veteran creator who has multiple Eisner Awards, super amazing. He used to, I won't say his name out of respect, I guess. But, like, he can't find work anymore because the editors running Marvel DC, they won't even talk to him. Because
they're woke?
They're woke, and he, let's say, is conservative. Let's say. There's a whole bunch of, I won't name names, but there's a whole bunch of conservative creators who can't find work in the industry. But they're able to get crowdfunding. There are some of them who have hundreds of thousands of dollars. A couple of them broke even millions on their books.
But should, is there like an American Shonen Jump?
No.
Should there be?
I mean, there is a translated version of Shonen Jump. No, that, in that,
right, I've, but I mean like our version
of
it.
There needs to be an anthology, yes. The problem is with printing. I don't know if I mentioned last time I print my own books at home, let's say. I can't do a lot. Like, I'm not like a, I'm doing all this stuff by myself. But like, to print in color is so expensive. You would have to print tens of thousands of books just to break even, let's say.
Yeah, but you ship. But doesn't Shonen do the manga chapters in black
and
white?
They do it in black and white, but they can, yeah, they have, it's called an anthology, if you've ever seen Heavy Metal in America. But yeah, if you look at Shonen Jump, Pulp used to do it back in the 90s too. There needs to be things like talent searches, anthologies, creators nowadays, like, we're trying to do indie comics. It's just that to get funded to do them is so hard, and those of us who get funded, we're working super slow because, like, I have a book called Mary Sue, for instance, that just got funded, like, months ago, and I'm trying to find time to work on it. It just barely got funding.
Right on, right on.
I was just thinking an awesome new genre would be, have you ever seen the app where you take a beer bottle and you scan it with the app, and it animates? The picture on the beer bottle becomes an animation? If you had a comic like that, you open, you read the comic, or you could put your phone up and view it, and well, that's a cartoon happens.
It's cool. I mean, but dang, you could just go on the website and watch the cartoon. You know,
the argument of digitizing comics, like they've been trying to experiment with that for a long time. And then there's the people who want to have a physical book at the store or mailed to them.
So I'm talking about
we should move on, but I just want to point out this is a really good example of American cultural stagnation. That, you know, it used to be that Americans were pushing culture and culture was being exported. Mm. And now we have, with comics, I mean, for me growing up, I'm not interested in the American comic industry.
Manga's crushed us.
Yeah.
It's over.
Good for them. I'm part Japanese. I'll take credit. You guys, you all suck.
Nice work,
moving
on.
The last part of the super chat, because that was a super chat, was Seamus, Jordan Peterson doing a Ben Shapiro impression.
It's like, okay, gang, if you're going to tell me that I can body the archetypalness of the hero by metaphorically dying, and you're also going to argue for universal healthcare, you're absolutely out of your mind. Because here's the thing, we can't have universal healthcare in a system where people are actually being their best selves, because that requires that you force other people to take responsibility for your actions, all right, gang?
Oh, my gosh.
That's Jordan Peterson as Ben Shapiro.
Thank epic. Nice.
Thank you.
Amazing. Garrett Savant says, white Skittles drain the rainbow. Rob Santana says, Tim, the speaker at Yale found the line. Do you think it will move, and in which direction? Of course it will move over the line. Yeah. She didn't find the line. She's well past it, dude. That's
backflipped
nuts.
Over it.
Yeah. She backflipped over it. No, it was like a round off back layout. It was an excellent maneuver. All right. Vapor Trail says, you can be rich or you can be left wing. Everyone who is both is pure evil. From Nico to Silicon Valley to Hollywood, communism has always been an ideology of the rich imposed from the top down, and they stay rich. That is correct.
Karl Marx was super rich, wasn't he?
I don't know.
He was born to a really wealthy family, I think.
I got J Mac said with a big super chat, say the punchline, Gerd Damnit.
Which one?
Well, we're just going to move on from that. Because I don't know what his punchline was going to be, and I don't think we should get the show kicked off YouTube.
Yeah. No. I'll have to tweet it.
Josh Van Horn says, I released a children's book on self-improvement that centers around jealousy and loss. It's called Boy Girl Monster, and it can be ordered from, what does it say? Umni Rocks. Umni.rocks. Huh. It's my little part in helping take the culture back. Thanks, crew.
That's cool.
I pointed this out on my segment about Nico. She's doing these TikTok videos, and she wears a Bernie shirt. Clearly, she doesn't know a whole lot about the ideology, and it doesn't matter. Young people who watch that will like her and like Bernie. What am I doing? What are we doing here? Well, we're doing a vlog. What do we have in the skate park? A big old Gadsden flag. That's the point. Mm-hmm. So people are going to watch it. I know what the Gadsden flag represents. Don't tread on me. It represents part of the American Revolution, a symbol of it, and freedom, liberty, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And when people watch the vlog and they see something silly like, you know, chickens eating cicadas or something, there it is. Building the culture, having those symbols exist and be prominent. Rainforest says, I think the Skittle market plan was, we are getting rid of our rainbow because only one rainbow matters this month, the rainbow flag. The store messed up. Yes, that's correct. That's what they did. And it was really, really dumb.
Yeah. Bad idea.
Poorly executed.
All right, let's see what we got here in the Super Chats. Jack Bailey says, do you know about the four basic personality types? Sanguine, yes. Choleric, phlegmatic, and melancholy. I highly recommend you look them up.
Yeah.
Explain, Seamus.
Yeah, so sanguine, choleric, melancholic, and phlegmatic. This is something that dates back to ancient Greece. The idea is you have people who are basically everyone fits into one of these categories. You're usually bleeding into another category. You'll have a secondary temperament, but someone who is sanguine is someone who is much more in their body. Sanguine actually means blood. It means you're a person who takes more pleasure in things, laughs more often, and tends to be less responsible but much more fun-loving. More pleasant and upbeat. Choleric people tend to be more angry. They're fiery. They like to analyze things. They're a bit more quick. Phlegmatic people are the people who more or less don't care or seem not to care. It takes a lot to really get them motivated about things. They're very chill as people. Huh. And then melancholic people are usually very introspective. They're more likely to be down about things. And most people fall into more than one category. It's rare you meet someone who perfectly falls into one of these categories. So you can take these tests. I know I'm like sanguine choleric based on the tests I've taken. You guys are probably, I mean, Tim's definitely choleric. I wonder what your secondary is. I highly recommend taking the test. It's very interesting.
I'm a sun and moon Pisces and sun a rising Leo.
What's different about this and like astrology is it's just an interesting way of categorizing people based on behaviors we know that they have. And the belief is that it's in the body very much.
It's
The general idea is there are certain aspects of your personality that are just innate. I think that's really what it's getting at. There are these elements of you that aren't necessarily learned. It's just who you are.
What animal are you? On the Chinese zodiac?
I'm a human.
On the Chinese
Deep.
Zodiac?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Monkey.
Are you? Someone pull it up on this.
Find out.
I'm a tiger.
Yeah, you're a tiger.
What does that mean?
But it's interesting. They brought the temperaments up, and it maybe it was because earlier we were talking about nature versus nurture and the fact that you really need to complete things. I was thinking of temperament when you were talking about that as well. I think that's a huge part of it.
We got a super chat here from NOS. He says, I've been having a really hard time in my life, struggling with my life goals and other things. Hmm. I know you guys say college is bad, but with what I want to do and the way I learn the best I need to, been struggling with school, but this really helped inspire me, so thanks.
Glad to hear it.
God bless you. I'm glad we could help.
Definitely, dude.
So what year were you born in?
79.
Did you look it up?
No, I'm in the process of it.
Every time I've heard his age before, but every time I hear it, it still shocks me.
42, the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Oh. According to...
What is it, Ian?
I don't know. Where do I look for this? I'm on
what
Wikipedia.
What if Ian's a gorilla?
I'm looking at it.
I am a gorilla.
Just type in Chinese zodiac.
I'm looking it up.
Lydia's
right
got it. Yang, yin, yang, yin. Every 12 years it repeats.
Yeah.
So you are... What'd you say you were, Tim? A tiger.
Yeah.
That's fixed element wood.
It looks like Ian is a horse.
Sure does. Take a look at his face.
Okay, no. I didn't
what
say
does that.
That
mean, a
what,
horse?
What year? 1992?
95.
He's young.
That's right. I'm young.
1995. Let's see. What do we got here? 95 is a pig. You're a pig.
Oink.
What about you, bro?
I'm a capitalist, 85. You know?
85?
Of course, 85.
Oh, I think that means you're
a hat.
No, is it?
This just seems insulting, frankly. Calling
are these stereotypes?
Oh,
no, he's an ox.
Okay.
You're an ox.
Okay.
Nice. Well, I am.
It's like none of these have sounded like
Ian, you're a sheep.
We represent all the four elements.
Ian's
we've got
sheep?
Water, fire, earth. I'm sorry, you're an ox, you're earth, and Tim, you are wood.
Ian's a sheep.
Oh, I am?
Yeah.
We need to... So I'm not a horse.
What? Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, sheep's not in here.
What are you?
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
Are you making fun of my political stance?
91.
I'm woke, dude.
91 is... Also a sheep.
I don't see sheep.
Oh, there are two sheep in this room.
Unbelievable. You guys just aren't independent thinkers.
I'm not clocking.
Like
it's true.
Sheep aren't on my
list. If you were born at a different time, I'm sorry. You'd be better at thinking.
You're all a bunch of sheep.
Know,
all
right.
Firefox says, the worst thing about the left is that they look at an object and try to imagine an offensive stereotype associated with it. That being said, we should stop talking about Harambe because it's racist, and I said so.
That's sad to me, Harambe.
Brian Nord says, did you see the footage released of the F-35 dropping a nuclear bomb in a test? It reminded me of what you were talking about with escalating tension. Did you guys know that the Pentagon stopped buying weapons for use in the Middle East and started buying weapons for use in Pacific warfare?
Yeah, we were discussing
Military.com reported this.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, bro, people, you got to, like, look at the grains of sand in the news stories. It's like the Pentagon is pulling back on war with ISIS and escalating war with China. And then, like, China says, we're going to start preparing for nuclear war with America.
Yeah.
Then Taiwan says China's preparing for war, and, like, they're crossing the Taiwan Strait, the center line.
Which is crazy. It wasn't that the reaction to our discussion of investigating the origins of the virus?
And
Which is what you do when you're innocent.
Did you hear what Joe Biden said? Know. Probably the scariest thing. Mm-mm. Come on, man. I was like, whoa.
Come on, man.
First of all,
you got hairy legs. Second,
she's in Vegas. Like,
he's like, if I could beat corn pop, I can beat you.
Oh, dude, yeah. that's where
I got hairy legs.
China's, isn't that kind of a telling response? We're like, we're going to investigate this. Actually, if you do, I'll kill you. Maybe you're guilty.
Mr. Toad says, can we get a G Prime 85 and Freedom Tunes production of a fungus butt cartoon?
Oh my gosh. We were talking about this.
Yeah.
We were talking about this virus that, or this fungus.
Yeah.
Which is ruining cicadas by causing fungus to grow out their bungus. And basically, yes. We got into the implications of a virus like that crossing over to human beings and how horrifying it would be.
Maybe like The Last of Us. The Last of Us, but like instead of their head, it's their bum.
Yeah, it produces, this fungus makes them produce like an amphetamine, and then they go hypersexual crazy. Their butt falls off.
They pretend to be female.
That's right.
Yeah. They pretend to be female, so the males will bang them. And then spread the fungus.
And they spread the fungus.
Seems like a job just for me.
It does, doesn't it?
Frankly, I heard this and I'm like, yeah, I'm the man for that
job. Full book.
Right.
A whole book.
Fungus spot.
Fungus spot. Right. On their bungus.
Fungus on their bungus.
Fungus on the bungus. Yeah. I'll do it.
Good.
1976 says, if you get 100,000 likes next Friday, will you guys dress up as the 60s Batman cast and have a chef prepare you various bugs and critique the food on Cast Castle? If we get 100,000 likes on a single episode, we will dress up like the cast of the 1960s Batman as we do the show, and we won't mention it once.
Don't even say anything.
I'm into it.
I'm just saying I didn't agree to this. So maybe if I'm on the show, everyone else will be dressed like Batman characters.
We'll have to get Michael Malice on the show.
Yes.
Malice would do it.
Yeah. Who would he dress up as?
I don't even know him, but I just assume.
Probably Robin.
He's a Riddler. He's a Riddler.
He'll always be Robin to me.
Here's a serious one. Breton Maybe says the Tiananmen Square massacre was 32 years ago today.
Wow.
Please remind your audience to never forget. Mm. Absolutely.
It's a big deal.
You know how they got that footage out? Did you hear about
that?
No. Oh, we forgot to talk about this. Sorry.
Oh, no.
What and what?
Darn it.
How did they
Did you see the GoFundMe Matt Walsh set up to help AOC's Abuela this morning? It's up to $93,000 as I write this. I wonder what nasty, poorly thought out thing she will say about those who donated. I wanted to launch the Get AOC's Abuela a Tesla GoFundMe so she can ride in style to her new crib.
So what happened? She lost her house.
It's just dilapidated.
I see. So now we're going to crowdfund her out of it. But let's support this. I think this is a good
way to cross the line. This is honestly a good turn for our political turmoil to take.
It's the most epic own ever. We totally helped your grandma. Yeah. High five each other.
Yeah.
Love.
But no, that is the thing. All right. I love that. I love that for as difficult as things are getting and as horrible as tensions are, like, we're still going to leave the grandmas out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say we're clearly involving her, but, like, they're being cool to grandma.
Dude, I'm imagining, at the Daily Wire HQ, like, Ben Shapiro and you know, like, Matt Walsh, they high-five each other and they're laughing. Like, we fixed totally
your house.
Owned it. We fixed
totally
your
house. AOC. Oh, my goodness, guys. Okay, AOC's never going to recover from this, folks. Her house, her grandmother's house is repaired. Get owned, all right, libs?
That's right.
It's weird. Like,
that
what's
good.
AOC is going to be like, thank you very much. Like, I'm curious.
Say?
It's a really, really smart move because AOC, I think, will want to react tribalistically because people are just in tribes. But the appropriate response is like, thank you.
I saw people responding to Matt's tweet about it. They're like, you're sick.
You know
what?
What? How?
He raised $100,000 for his grandma. He is legally obligated to give it to her.
Yeah.
It's not a scam.
Yeah.
He's actually doing it. I guess it's like, you know, I read that tipping in Asia is an insult. Like,
really?
If you go to a restaurant,
because it's like you think I'm a charity case.
You're telling the owner that they can't afford to pay their staff, and their staff need help.
Well, the staff already works so hard that they feel like I've already given it my all. There's nothing more that you can give me to reward me.
It's changing nowadays, but like, I guess that's the idea. Like, Ben Shapiro tweeted he put in $500, the standard monthly payment for the Tesla, to help AOC's Abuela. And it's like clearly being disrespectful, but giving her grandma 100,000,
money.
It's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
It's like, but okay,
part of why
you,
it's a good, part of why I guess it's an own is because we're showing that these problems can be solved through voluntary charity. Yes. It's not just about the government. And it's hilarious because people on the left will totally miss that point when it comes to GoFundMe and other crowdsourcing platforms. Every single time someone does something charitable, they're like, that's just socialism. They're like, can you believe these conservatives trying to raise money for their cause? It's like, dude, A, we're not talking about seizing the means of production here, but B, even if you want to argue that the government doing anything is socialism, just helping people isn't socialism. You can do that privately. Yep. That's been our entire argument.
It's a clever own.
Yeah, yeah.
Scott Brumley says, Jesus did not speak out against the empire. He talked about personal responsibility and devotion to God. He never spoke about things of this world like governments. Even when he went before Pilate, he didn't say anything about Rome.
He did speak of governments, but yeah, it's true. I mean, he did speak of governments because he talks about rendering unto Caesar, but it's true. I mean, a lot of people will try to take Jesus and just fit him into their particular political ideology. Or they'll say things like Jesus is a socialist, and which is completely ridiculous. I mean, if you're so brainwashed that you think this ideology that came around in the 1800s was being embodied by Christ 2,000 years ago, you're... I mean, you're at a point where you almost can't be reasoned with, because basically what happened was Marxism plagiarized certain good elements of Christianity and then bastardized them and then did away with a lot of the parts of Christianity that are actually worthwhile and became openly hostile towards them. But then because they stole some values from Christianity, they start saying, see, Christianity is Marxist, or Jesus was Marxist. It's like, no, you're getting it backwards. You took some of our principles and now you're sort of projecting that onto us and arguing that we took them from you. But we were here first.
Yeah, Ian, when you mentioned that about Jesus being against the empire, they actually expected Jesus to come with a sword and to actually take back the kingdom for the people who follow God, and that he told them, this is not the case, this is not what I'm doing.
My kingdom is not of this world. And also, he's referring to a kingdom as well here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a problem with an innate problem with a political structure.
All right. General XTA says, I'm an electrician, and the economy is wrecking everything. The price of material is exponentially going up because of the combination of inflation and shortage of raw material. Even bidding is lasting less than a month. Crazy, man. Drew Richmond says, Tim, to explain some of the recent shortages, you should watch the Wendover Productions video about 2021 shortages. It would answer a lot of your questions about what's causing a lot of the supply shortages right now. My question is, you know, where do we go from here? And so I mentioned this yesterday. I'll say it again today because, you know, George didn't hear it. The work that we got done on the studio to expand, I would not be able to do this time because it's 4 to 5 times more expensive.
Yeah.
So that means the money that we made last year has lost 80% or some odd of its value in terms of expanding this business. Isn't that insane?
And the investments we made last year are worth 5 times what we put into it.
Insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I bought a stack of Bitcoin like 6 years ago and forgot about it. And now I'm just looking at it like, jeez, man.
I'm excited about shipping container housing as a future. I got contacted by someone that runs a shipping container company.
Live in the pod, Ian.
Live in the pod, baby.
Live in the pod, eat the bugs, baby.
We did eat the bug. We had cricket bread last week.
Live in the dream,
live
in the pod.
That stuff molded fast.
Yeah.
Like a day.
Maybe because it's meat. Oh, there was an egg in it, too. I think we did an egg in it, too.
So the animal that molded so quick?
Maybe. Animal product tends to mold faster than plant product.
Crickets, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see what we got to be in the old super chits. Sam T says, all colors in the visual light spectrum combine to make white light. Maybe that was Skittle's point. Science illiterate people don't get it.
That's what I'm saying.
Nerdy joke.
I like when you do super chats in different places.
X-Runner says, the second RPG video game for South Park, you can play as Black, less loot, less XP, and trade in at shops, saying the title can get you banned. It's actually funny that the difficulty, it's a difficulty bar, like you can make it more difficult, and if you choose hard mode, your character turns black. It's a really funny joke.
That is very funny.
Gareth Green says, koalas are not bears, they are marsupials.
Oh.
Also, apparently elderly Japanese people commit crimes to get in jail so they'll be taken care of.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Crazy, man.
That's really sad.
That's crazy.
Indicative of a problem.
I would say so.
And the way the system is built.
Bryn Terranova says, first time, long time. Comics. George, how do you feel about the storytelling in web comics and specifically publishers like Hiveworks?
Hiveworks I haven't heard of, but let's see. Web comics have been a thing for a very long time, I would say, since I was in high school at least. You got the grandfathers like PvP, Penny Arcade, those guys, and they were able to monetize for a very long time. I guess since a lot of the audiences have shifted over to social media, So I publish my stuff mostly on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that. I don't really have a website that I fully, like, I don't maintain it. I'm not very responsible with it, but I've been doing all right. Webcomics, you see, it really depends on the reader preference. Do I want to read a book on a screen or on a piece of paper, a book? Do I want something I can collect and give to my friends? There's something shareable about that. It's kind of a kitchen sink problem. Like, for instance, Shonen Jump, I think you can subscribe for like $2 a month or something like that, and you can read their entire history from like decades back. You can read it for free. And that was a response to people reading Scanlations for the longest time. I used to do that too.
Yeah, me too.
I used to download anime like on my fixed 56K modem back in the day. Like
every Wednesday when the Scanlation for Naruto would come out.
Yeah.
From the beginning to the end for like, how long was that? Like 15 years or something?
Longest time, yeah. I did that with Naruto distributed? No, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
But I mean, the response to that, I remember I was lucky enough to go to Japan and I talked to a couple of editors. The editor that was working on Naruto, actually, he told me that their biggest problem at the time, this was 2014, was dealing with pirating here in the States. They knew that the passion for manga was huge here in the States, but people didn't have the money. Like, the audience, say teenagers, 20-somethings, they want to read the books, but they don't have a ton of money to, like, if you want to read One Piece now, there's 97 volumes or something.
That's nuts.
Even
dude.
At $10 each back in the day, or $12 now, you can't afford that.
Yeah.
And you don't have the shelf space for it anyway. So webcomics solve that problem in that you can read the entire catalog. I wouldn't know how to monetize that personally. Like, there's a couple of solutions that I would propose for creators. Like, say I have a Patreon, I could put my entire catalog on Patreon right now. You can read my whole catalog. That's one way to solve it. Or I offer my comic strips for free on Twitter, and I have like a tip jar system. It's not perfect, but I think there's a sort of relationship that can be developed, cultivated between creators and audience. Having a middleman like a publisher can help, but then you have to ask, what value does the publisher bring? What value does the retailer bring?
If you don't have money.
Right, like right now, the biggest problem the past couple of years is that there was a distributor called Diamond Distribution in the States that, long story short, if I had a book that I wanted to sell at comic book shops, I would have to sell or solicit a couple thousand of them, say 3,000, and they wouldn't even touch my property if I couldn't sell 3,000. I would have to ship, print my books, send them to Diamond, and they would distribute them to retailers who would order my book based solely on the title that they would find in a catalog.
That makes no sense.
It was
sense.
A terrible system, especially for indie creators.
Right.
So indie creators in the States have a really hard time right now finding an audience and finding, like, to even talk to a publisher, they won't talk to you. But most of the time, unless there's a lot of, maybe I'm biased, but I think there's a lot of nepotism going on in the, I won't name names, but like there are certain publishers, unless you're friendly with them already, like you can go and talk to them at a convention, talk to an editor, or I know a guy who knows a guy who will get me a book deal so I can write, and we'll find an artist who lives in like Thailand or something who will work for like pennies. But their quality, ironically, their quality is just as good, if not better, than a lot of American creators, and they cost nothing almost.
Well, we got the super chat from Rockslide. He says, I'm an anti-woke artist and plan to make lots of cool comics. Yeah. Elevator pitch? A futuristic world where mythology is real, and that's just one. I want to build culture, like you've said. I would absolutely fund a manga or a graphic novel.
Or like an entire company.
Manga, we're not Japanese.
Like a production company.
What should happen, and I think it can happen. There just has to be like a sort of pirate attitude. Not pirate, but like, all right, say I have a certain number of people on Twitter that follow me and like read my stuff or something like that. I know how to print books. I know how to write books. I know how to draw. I can do the entire production myself. So if I were to get a couple of people that know how to also do this, a couple of editors, a couple of people who can oversee certain steps on the production line, we can print a couple thousand copies of an anthology, let's say. Get a couple of creators who will do a 20-page short story. You guys submit your book, submit your story. If your story does well, maybe we'll do another volume after this. So you can crowdfund something like this. Like, I could just say, anthology, we'll call it whatever. What was the butt cicada?
Fungus?
Oh, the fungus out of the cicada.
Fungus from the bungus.
So you call this anthology Bungus Fungus or something, volume one, and you just get like a couple dozen creators who submit a 10, 20-page story in color, black and white, whatever, It's just a single volume thing.
All right, let's do it.
You could crowdfund that pretty quick.
Crowdfund it. Let's just do it. I'll fund it.
Well, all right. We could talk about this afterwards. But like, for instance,
so everybody, you heard it. If you've drawn up a graphic novel and you got a series, and we're going to do an anthology.
Even just a short story, I think that's the right way to go. Just introduce yourself as a creator, and we'll have like a submission system. You can do something like that.
Boom.
I mean, really, it's not that hard, and it's kind of a talent search kind of thing, so that you can gain an audience. Everybody shares. All right, say I have 70,000 people, whatever, on Twitter, and a couple, 40,000, whatever, on Instagram. I can share that audience, and then some other creator comes along and brings their audience, and they are introduced to mine. Mine is introduced to theirs. We share the audience. We can get comics going again. It's sort of like a jumpstart kind of thing, but
let's do it.
All right, so that's the biggest obstacle, well, I think, anyway, for American creators who want an in, and some veteran creators can contribute to something like this.
Just start doing it. Everybody submit your graphic novels, your comics, your short stories to pitches@timcast.com, and we'll start publishing. And we'll figure it out. We'll make a portion of the website. We'll find a handful of series that we think are good, and then we'll aim for like a chapter a week, right?
Chapter a week would be very high. All right, so in Japan they do a chapter a week, like 18 pages, but they have a ton of assistants helping them.
That was the big problem with Bleach, though. The guy was overwhelmed.
He got so burnt out. Same thing with Berserk. And I love a series called Vagabond, where the same thing happened, where they have assistants, but they get burnt out. In America, it's sort of
a chapter a day.
America, it's like 20-something pages per month, something like that, I think is reasonable for a single creator.
Man, that's rough, though.
It's pretty slow.
Yeah.
Manga comes out faster. It's in black and white. That's the problem.
Yeah, we'll do it in black and white.
All right. Well, we could talk about this off air again.
But I'm doing it anyway, so pitches@timcast.com. It's happening.
All right.
We'll have – I'm totally down to have a section for our comics. Anyway, it's we're getting late, so everybody go follow us at TimcastIRL on Facebook and Instagram. Help share our videos. You can follow me at TimCast. Friday night, we got the vlog coming out tomorrow where we eat the bugs, and you'll probably enjoy it. It's fun. And other weird shenanigans, and it's going to be a good time. So thanks for hanging out, man. It's been a blast. Subscribe to this channel. Hit the like button. Share it with your friends. Become a member. Leave us a good review. George, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, just if you guys want to follow me, I'm gprime85 on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to buy my stuff, I have my links to my shop in my bio on both, and I'm on Patreon too if you just want to throw me a tip, and I try to offer my stuff for free as much as I can, and buy my books, buy other indie creators' books, and let's see what happens with this anthology thing. I think it's a great idea.
Follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter.
That's right.
I'm at youtube.com/freedomtunes. That's where I post my cartoons. We do two a week. We only were able to do one because we were trying to get caught up. But we do two cartoons a week. You guys should really enjoy them. And also, if you want to support the show, I guess, patreon.com/freedomtunes. Or if you want to buy one of our shirts, freedomtunesmerch.com.
There we go.
And I do want to remind you, Bungus Fungus.
Bungus Fungus is
if
real.
If you want to help your enemy's Bungus grandmother, go ahead.
Shout out to
maybe we got more in common than we thought.
If you were an artist, draft the story of the Bungus Fungus, the fungus from the bungus, and it's about a fungus that makes people's butts fall off
of the itty-bitty chungus
and replaces their butt with a fungus and turns them into bungus zombies.
Like, I could see an entire industry creating new underwear just for those people.
So it's kind of like a parody of The Last of Us.
It really is the story of The Last of Us too.
But it's Bungus Fungus. No, but it's like but a guy eats. It's a guy. He's reading BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed says eat a cicada, and he's a soy boy, and he does. And then he gets the bungus fungus, and then he becomes the first patient zero of the bungus fungus zombie apocalypse.
Tim, when the bungus
write it up, submit it, we will publish.
That's a when the bungus fungus zombie apocalypse actually happens, you're going to be very embarrassed.
I know that right now there's like 10 people in me like running and like drawing the first chapter.
Take notes.
Draw it with your butt if you can.
Yes, definitely.
No, I'm serious. Let's get the fungus from the bungus zombie apocalypse comic. Yeah.
And I'm in the corner pushing buttons. I am Sour Patch Lids on Twitter. You guys can follow me there. I am trying to get more followers than Sour Patch Kids, who I was happy to note did not change to a rainbow symbol on Twitter this month. I like that.
That is pretty good.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at youtube.com/castcastle, and you can watch us hang out, eat the bugs, and we'll see you then.
Bye, guys.